Good evening. I'd like to welcome everybody to tonight's meeting, Tuesday, February 17th, 2026, at the City Hall of Lake Alfred. So we don't have, is Pastor Gomez here by chance? I didn't see him. So in lieu of him, I'm going to ask Aaron Nangle to come up, if he would, and ask the invocation for us, and then we'll do the pledge.
Heavenly Father, we come before you today with grateful hearts for the city of Lake Alfred and the people who call it home. We ask for your wisdom, your guidance over our commissioners as they make decisions that impact our community. Grant them clarity of thought, unity and purpose, and hearts committed to service. Help all of us here listen with respect, speak with kindness, and work together for the good of our city. May our efforts tonight strengthen our community and reflect integrity, fairness, and care for one another. In your name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Aaron. Okay. Good evening, everybody. I'd like to ask City Clerk Linda Bourgeois to call the roll, please.
Mayor Fuller.
Here.
Vice Mayor Daly.
Here.
Commissioner Eden.
Here.
Commissioner Dearman.
Here.
Commissioner Robinson.
Here.
Okay, everybody accounted for. I'd like to ask the City Manager and the City Attorney for their announcements. We'll start off with City Manager Ryan Levengood.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Next City Commission meeting will be held on Monday, March the 2nd of 2026. If you'll draw your attention to the screen, we've got Lake Alfred Royalty in the room this evening. Amy Parrish won first place in the High School Lake Wales chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution, and this is for an American history essay contest. So congratulations. I understand that she'll be representing us at the state level, and we'll invite her up here during the special recognitions later to read her her essay. So let's give her a round of applause. Congratulations. Also, too, this past weekend we had the Black History Month celebration in Fruitland Park, and so that's the second year that we've done it. Congratulations to just staff for helping and the community organizing that. A lot of Lake Alfred history, and just didn't know just how much this. I always call it, we always punch above our weight class in Lake Alfred, and Fruitland Park is no exception to that. So always a fantastic program, and thank you for Wanda and the Historic Society for putting that together. Also, too, we've got our Lake Alfred Heritage Festival coming up on Saturday, March the 7th, and that'll be from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. right here in downtown Lake Alfred. And then also this upcoming weekend, we've got the Raise the Bar and Grill. That's going to be the ribbon cutting, and that'll be Saturday, February 21st, and that'll be at noon. What's that?
28th.
Not
the 21st.
Is it the 28th? Why does it say the 21st?
It should be the 28th.
Hey, that was a quiz. We'll just, for me or for everybody else, I don't know. What date is it, Aubrey? 28th. Okay. All right. And we've got, we're hosting Polk County's very first TEDx event. That's going to be on February 21st, and that's going to be at 12:30 p.m. down at Macaw Preserve. It is a ticketed event, so you can either scan that QR code, and we've also got it up on the website. So that'll be a Polk County first, and we're bringing it right here to Lake Alfred. And speaking of Fruitland Park history, Dr. Price is from Fruitland Park.
Yes.
Just keeping the legacy going and looking forward to that event. That'll be interesting. And that is all that I have. No other announcements.
Thank you, sir. And now, City Attorney Seth Clater, please.
Only that we remain grateful to represent the great city of Lake Alfred, Mayor. Thank you.
Great to have you with us tonight. Okay, I'm going to defer now to the City Manager for a presentation. You're up.
All right. Very good. When we presented this action item in December, we didn't know how much attention we were going to get. But you remember that I talked about the community outreach portion of it? I can tell you that we have succeeded in that on all fronts. And this is in reference to, of course, the fire department's brush truck. The news media picked it up, and as they do, they kind of clipped it in very short fashion. and just wanted to take an opportunity to kind of readdress that action item. The vote's already occurred on it. We've already ordered it. We're anticipating delivery probably late March, early April. But just to kind of go back over the analysis of it, and I've handed out copies. There's a stack over there by the door for anyone that would like it or on their way out. And this is just kind of a restatement of the analysis that was presented back in December. For the past 5 years, a replacement of the fire department's brush truck has been planned and budgeted for in the city's capital improvement program. And so the commission knows that every year we go through the budget process. And not only do we do the two-year budget, we also do the five-year CIP. And that kind of plans out those larger capital expenses up to 5 years out. So we originally started that. That made it to the budget, I believe, in 2021 or 21-22. And so that brush truck replacement has been listed there for 5 years. A brush truck is a versatile piece of equipment that is designed to access hard-to-reach areas that a traditional fire engine cannot. The city's existing brush truck is a 26-year-old F-350. The proposed new brush truck will be outfitted with a 100-gallon water tank, medical and other equipment that meet the National Fire Protection Association, or the NFPA, standards for a brush truck apparatus. New brush trucks typically utilize an F-550 as the base vehicle. The difference here is that the base vehicle for Lake Alfred brush truck will be an electric vehicle. And so the question of the day, of course, is why choose an electric vehicle as the base for the brush truck instead of the traditional F-550. And the ones that we've kind of highlighted here are reduced cost. We're looking around $150,000 for the EV base and then the additional equipment versus anywhere from $220,000 to $300,000 utilizing the F-550 base. We also received $40,000 of donated equipment. And also, too, the funded through school speed enforcement public safety program dollars that can only be spent on public safety. So that was part, because it's got the outreach component and it is a public safety expense, all the donations that people generously gave as they sped through town, those dollars and cents have accumulated and have been repurposed for this. And that's just one slice of that funding. As the commission may recall, we pulled in over $1 million in that fund. So we're looking at complete streets projects. We've hired additional police officers, light towers, and other safety equipment that we've also purchased with that. Another layer for it was reduced maintenance and fuel costs as compared to a traditional gasoline engine. Reduced lead time, we're looking at around a 3-month turnaround versus a 12-month turnaround for the traditional one. The commission may recall we got that apparatus or the fire engine award over a year ago, and I think there was an 18-month lead time on getting the full-blown fire engine. Other ancillary events, it also supports firefighter health. There's an increased focus on reducing cancer risk in firefighters, especially from exhaust from their own vehicles and equipment, with an emphasis on improving ventilation within fire stations. All of the new fire stations that are built now are built with kind of the state-of-the-art ventilation systems that they hook up to the various vehicles that they have just to prevent the exhaust from circulating within the bays. So obviously an EV has a potential advantage there in the sense that it doesn't have any exhaust. Also, too, looking forward to utilize as a pilot program for EV vehicles in general. This will be the city's first electric vehicle, and we'll be using this experience to evaluate the technology's capabilities and its limitations. We have all seen the electric Amazon delivery trucks, and that technology has continued to improve. Lastly, increased versatility and multi-use. The chief will speak more to this on the operational side of it, but a brush truck, you might get 4, maybe 5 calls for service in the entire year if you're lucky that's specific to that apparatus. But it's one of those cases where it's better to have it and not need it than to need it and not have it. And so it kind of operates that very niche environment for that call to service. 99% of our calls for service are all accessible by roads, so your traditional engine or your rescue vehicles handle the bulk of those calls. But with this option, we get increased versatility in multi-purpose use. So not only do we get the brush truck capabilities, we can also use it for a rescue and command vehicle due to its smaller relative size and speed. Will allow for a wider range of calls for service that it can reasonably respond to. And then additionally, and as I quipped earlier, the community outreach and engagement portion of it, you know, just to draw attention, not to the EV side of it, but to draw attention to the fire service. Lake Alfred, Polk County, all agencies really across the state are suffering from vacancies in public safety across the board. So getting in front of those elementary school kids, I think we've got 6 schools in Lake Alfred, so getting in front of those kids, inspiring the next generation of firefighters, that's also part of the outreach component to this vehicle. So in summary, the answer to the question of why an EV brush truck is that it made sense, and it made sense. It will provide the fire department with a brush apparatus, increased versatility, including community engagement opportunities, and then this is combined with reduced acquisition, maintenance, and fuel costs when compared to the alternatives. And, Chief, with that, I will yield to you for a more detailed presentation just on the operational side of it, if you can kind of expand upon, you know, the capabilities and what you're looking to achieve.
Darius Livingston, Fire Chief, City of Lake Alfred. How everybody doing? Thank you. First of all, glad everybody came out. Respected commissioners and mayor and everybody here tonight. Just wanted to give you a little dialogue. Didn't want to say everything that the city manager said because he pretty much covered the whole basis of it. Seemed like he'd do his research and know his stuff, right? Great city manager. As some know, this, you know, it had some controversy behind it, but when you think about the history of the fire services, all fire services uses brush trucks. So brush trucks are not new to the fire services, right? And so over time, the starting brush truck was like a Ford Ranger. And somebody was creative enough to say, somebody said, no, this is big enough. Anything bigger will get stuck. Don't take it off the, this is big enough. Anything bigger, you don't want to do that, right? And somebody said, no, you know what? I think I'm going to do an F-150. Right? And somebody said, no, don't do that because now you're going to start getting stuck. We just said stay with Ford Ranger. And so they went to the F-150 and then that became the new trend. Then somebody said, you know what? Let's do an F-250. The 150 said, no, that's big enough. Don't, you're going to get stuck. And now I said all that to say, now we're at F-550s off-road. F-550. Those are huge trucks and they're going off-road and people are using those units as brush trucks. And so, why not? So all the controversy that come with it, I personally, when I think operation, I don't think about controversy. I think about what's right, right? And that's what we do. We signed up for the job to do what's right. We see a problem, we fix the problem. And controversy comes with the territory. So the unit that we have now is a F-350. And the unique, do they get the job done? Yes, they do, right? But it comes with a cost. When they sit, like Mr. Levinger said, we ran under 10 brush fires last year. When they sit, they cost money because they start leaking. The components are not being moved around. The oils and we start them, but they sit more than they run, so it costs money. Then when we run them, they cost money. So I'm not afraid, or we're not afraid to come up with a solution that works. We're not reinventing the wheel. We just took two platforms and just brought them together. That's all we did. It's not the gas platform. It just happens to be an EV platform. And that's essentially what we did. Now, even with our older units, we are the fumes. The fumes are causing firefighters cancers. As soon as firefighters, a high probability of firefighters that retire end up with cancer. And it's because of all those fumes and all of these units over time. That's why they got these super vents to try to get those carcinogens out of the bay, because we hurting ourselves long term. So when you do the right thing and get multiple use or get multiple fixes, I think that's pretty amazing if you ask me. Outside of that, like Mr. Levingood said, with the Cybertruck unit, outside of cost and versatility, it promotes the community engagement, recruitment tool. The youth love them. And it supports the cancer initiative, most importantly, because once we get done serving, we want to be able to live a little bit. That's the goal, right? You retire, you be able to live, and we just want to contribute to a good cause. What we did do also is we partnered up with a local partner. We could have took it anywhere, because I'm telling y'all now, so many people came and asked us, can they partner with us on this, because they knew the benefits. But we wanted to stick with a local partner. And a partner that we have, they are a phenomenal partner. They're experienced in this realm of brush trucks. They do brush trucks national. They do nationwide, right? And who better to partner with than a local partner? So we decided to partner with Chemical Container Warrior Brush Truck, and they are here tonight, and we appreciate you for coming out. And if you don't mind, I'm going to ask you guys to come on up and tell us a little bit about yourself, how long you've been doing this business, how many units have you seen over time, what type of trucks are you doing, what size units, and just give us some history of why you decided to partner with us as well. So without further ado, Warrior Brush Truck Chemical Containers. Thank you, Mr. White.
I'll try to keep this a little short. I'm not much of a movie star. So.
Yeah, if you would both of you please say your name and who you represent, please, and make it part of our record. Thank you.
Containers Incorporated. Everybody hear me?
My name is Carson Bassett, and I'm here for Chemical Containers.
Thank you.
Brush Trucks.
We've been in business for over 40 years. Great company. We're into a lot of different entities. We build a lot of different types of pumping apparatus, be it spray equipment, ag equipment, roadside spray, railroad spray, you name it, we've pretty much done it. Tank farms, industrial chemical plants, we're really accustomed to moving liquid around. Been messing around with brush trucks probably legitimately full-time hard at it for a good 5 to 6 years, but we have always kind of dabbled in it. We've done a lot of off-road type brush trucks, like wildland trucks and stuff like that. I'm very, very honored to be able to address this truck right here. I think it's pretty amazing the way the technology has evolved around all your power equipment, batteries, and how things have came along. Really, what in 10 years is incredible. So, for the Chief is kind of spot on. You know, they're getting a multi-purpose vehicle that I'm pretty sure they'll use more than that truck that they have sitting over there for a lot more calls. So, I kind of applaud it. Mm-hmm. And like I said, again, I'm very honored to be a part of it.
If we could, I took the trip, and so you can see on the map, they're a local company, Warrior Brush Trucks, right there in Lake Wales, just north of Frostproof, mm-hmm. and south of Lake Wales. So right here in Polk County, you know, when we talk about the EV or, you know, the Tesla, you know, comes up, but the Tesla is just the base vehicle. And something that you'll see with some of the pictures of the equipment that they can do, I think these gentlemen told me they can make anything into a brush truck, Prius, a golf cart, you know, an Amazon delivery vehicle. They were telling me it's a tank, it's a pump, and it's a hose, and they can, if it's got four wheels or maybe even two, you know, they can convert it into a brush truck. So when we went on site, and again, I appreciate y'all taking me on the field trip. Every now and then I get to get out of the office and go on site, and so got to put eyes on their operation. Very impressive. Every time I thought we were at the end of the line, there was another building with yet more people, you know, working on various aspects. So here we go. This is their standard base, as they would call it, the F-550 that the Chief alluded to earlier. That was then kind of giving us the nickel tour there, so to speak. And there's kind of the vacant or the back part where they would put the accessory on or the bed. And then we went into their facility. This is kind of the brush truck apparatus, if you will. And if you guys, what do you refer to that? Is that just the brush truck component, or what's the label on that?
The bed and the apparatus.
The bed and the apparatus. So that's what actually turns it. That's just a truck, so no different than an electric vehicle or a golf cart or anything else. That's just kind of the base foundation vehicle. But that's what actually turns it into the brush truck, correct? Okay. All right. Very good. And this is one where you can actually see the guy working on it. I think this one might have been headed to Haines City, if I remember correctly.
That one there is Haines City.
Okay. All right. And then so they combine that. They'll combine the back portion with the truck and then assemble it together, and then that'll be the brush truck. This is one, and I believe you said these were for Florida Fish and Wildlife. So this is kind of like for the state apparatuses, where they'll use that for Fish and Wildlife for their, you know, rural land operations. And that's also an F-550?
Yes.
Okay. But so again, similar, just I guess they got the gray color instead of the red for the state. This was a picture, and they've got great YouTube videos that they have on their website where they show, you know, different apparatuses that they've built. So this would be more of your standard F-550 brush truck that's been assembled.
This one, I believe that was Sanibel.
It was.
Yeah.
Okay, man knows his own equipment. I like that. And this is one, looks like a Highlands County. Now, this one's got kind of the nozzle on front, but this is more of a heavier duty one. And then this one was a brush fire high water rescue hybrid, and that one was going to Tampa. So when it says hybrid, is that gas and electric? Is that what you mean by that?
No, that's a high water rescue slash brush truck.
Oh, it's a high water rescue slash brush truck. Okay. So then you've got that one going to Tampa Fire Rescue. And you guys were telling me, and I was pretty impressed with just the list of clients that you have. Who all do you do business with in Florida and then not only here but outside of the state?
Well, so we've got, and I might get a little few of these off. We've sold some in Virginia. Chesapeake, Virginia has a brush truck. We have some in Texas. We have some in North Carolina and South Carolina. And we have pretty much Highlands County, Okeechobee County just ordered the trucks from us, Citrus County, Tampa, Osceola County.
Okay.
Volusia County just ordered another truck from us. And I'm probably going to miss some people.
You missed Polk, you Payne City's got one.
Sanibel. It goes on and on and on. Hardy County. So we pretty much just Lake County, we're working on one for them.
Okay.
Alachua County. So, yeah, pretty much everywhere. The state of Florida, Florida Forestry.
With FWC, right, and Forestry.
And the Florida Forestry.
And Florida Forestry, okay.
They also build their trucks.
Fantastic. And a build like this, I know when we were walking through, you were estimating anywhere from probably like 220 on the low end to upwards of like 300,000.
That truck right there is around 240, 250.
Okay. Okay. And so that's kind of consistent with the analysis. So again, it's a different, just the platform that you choose. And then I found this one on your website too. So this is actually, now is that considered a brush truck or what is that?
Emergency rescue UTV. So that's for Plant City.
Okay, and so that's got Plant City Fire. So when we were saying they could convert a golf cart into a brush truck, it looks like they've already done it, and you've got Plant City over there. So and then I use this as the reference, but we've all seen the Amazon delivery vans that go by. They're almost completely electric now at this point, and so I'm betting you could probably turn that into a brush truck if you had one. Okay, we might get a big tank on that one. And then so then the question is just a Tesla or a Cybertruck. So again, rather than an F-550 or an Amazon delivery van or a golf cart, we're just choosing the EV as kind of the baseline there. Tesla is just further along than a lot of the other electric vehicle producers at this point. I know Rivian is the one that I believe the Amazon Prime trucks are all Rivian. But as he suggested, though, in the last 10 years, the technology has come so far. So it's hard to imagine 5-10 years from now where it will go. And then you're hoping for additional competition and creativity. One of the things that he talked about, and not to get too deep into the technical jargon, but about because this is going to run entirely off of the battery. And even when you look at these, they have a gas engine, but then there's also a generator in the back that runs the pump portion of it. So there's two gas motors. Now, in theory, we could have an EV on the base vehicle and then have the gas power generator on the back, but we're trying to go for complete EV. And one of the things that he was concerned about was just the amperage and things like that and converting it. Now, they've got a working solution to that. But as a part of this being a pilot program, we're going to be able to provide feedback back to manufacturers, and so they may make a dedicated brush truck EV component that actually has the amperage in order to get higher capacity or higher GPM pumps. So this is all kind of part of the process of just improving the technology and making it better. And so if the private sector sees a demand for this, they could then foster additional innovation. And then again, we've this is kind of the more basic example of like the police cruiser. We take a Ford Explorer and then cruiser, and then we turn it into the police car. So we do these conversions throughout the public safety component of it. And I know we'll have the opportunity for questions and answers from both the chief or myself or the gentleman from Warrior. Thank you all for coming out this evening. But the last thing that I wanted to kind of end on staff's presentation, and chief, if you kind of help us with this, you know, when we talk about EVs, it kind of sounds like it's far-fetched or risky or even groundbreaking. But there's an aspect of public safety and fire operations that we've already gone to electric and battery operated almost 10 years ago. And at the time, it was a very controversial measure. There was a lot of pushback and skepticism, but now we wouldn't imagine going back to it. And so with that, Chief, if we'll proceed with the demonstration.
All right, so as Mr. Levengood said, we want to show you a small presentation of one of those controversial components in the fire services situations that people thought they were saying, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't switch over. It'll be so wrong, and we're going to show you what we're talking about. Everybody ever heard of the jaws of life? These are extrication tools to get people out of vehicles. We're going to show you what we were doing prior to going to battery. So what y'all going to see now, they're going to set it up. We're going to show y'all real time a real setup of the jaws of life and what we used to do. And then we're going to show y'all what we're doing now. So just bear with us as they as the firefighters bring. Yeah, go ahead.
Can we open that door?
You're going to do it.
So put yourself in the mindset of an accident. Somebody is in a car. And they are needing help. They're injured, and time is of the essence. This is how we had to, in the past, set up extrication tools for jaws of life to get individuals out of vehicles. So first, we got to get on scene. We got to grab the tools. And this is a two-person operation. And all of this stuff has to come off the truck. We're going to set it up here, and then we're going to take the generator outside because the fumes that come behind turning that on is atrocious. Now, normally this happens off-road a lot, so we would have to carry all of these items to wherever that vehicle is, and I hope we have enough lines. Now, I want y'all to see how long it takes to set this stuff up. You have to make sure all the lines are connected. You have to make sure those lines are not frayed or not compromised. Make sure all the fluid, the hydraulic fluid, everything is intact. And then you have to almost hope that it starts up when somebody is in need at that very moment. You have to hope that it starts up. So now that they have it connected, great job. Now we're going to just take it outside. We're going to just walk it outside so we can crank it up for you. Oh, here? Yes, ma'am. We do. If we do get a little fumes, I'm sorry, Commissioner and Mayor. Just trying to show the demonstration. Again, someone is in their vehicle waiting for help, and this is required with the old tools that they said you cannot go away from. You have to stick to this because this is the only thing that works. They're closing the door a little bit so that the fumes don't come in.
Thank you.
Yes, go ahead. Thank you. So now, again, we took the machine, we took the generator outside because of the fumes. Those fumes are normally by the patient. So the responders and the patients are getting those fumes. And I'm telling you, it's very bad. That's why we have to make sure we close the door. Go ahead. Stand up with it a little bit so everybody can see. This is standard. All right, so now you see the two opening and closing. All right, so what we'll do is we'll stop there. Thank you.
Sorry.
Nice. Yeah, it's okay. We'll close the door. Now grab the tool we're using today. Grab the Jaws of Life of the day. Now that's the hydraulic version that, I keep stressing, everybody said that you cannot go away from it. It'll never work if you go away from it. And this is what we're using now for over a decade. Okay, so one person carries it in, and now go ahead and set it up, please. Connect the battery. Hit start. Now, stand up with it, please. Same thing. 5 seconds. Now, you tell me if you know somebody's in a vehicle and you know that time is of the essence for life, which tool would you rather use? Definitely the battery. So all I'm saying is that's the controversy in the fire service about this tool. It was one of the biggest controversies that they said would never happen, would never work. Why are y'all doing this? This is crazy. You're going to go battery versus hydraulic. And now, if you ask anybody today, they forgot about the hydraulic. Thank you.
I'm surprised we still had it.
Yeah.
You could fully submerge these in salt water or water, and they work. I mean, you can't put that gas powered motor in water. It's not going to work. So you can actually go underwater and just go
Thank you. And these are your responders. Thank you, Captain Willis, and thank you, Firefighter Compton. Can y'all
give him a round of applause? Chief, can you have him pull out that battery, though?
Hey, bring the battery one back, please.
No, ma'am.
It's designed to go underwater.
So,
by the manufacturer.
If you have a question, please feel free to come up.
Well, we'll open the public hearing, Mr. Okay. Mayor. But when I first saw that, I instantly thought anyone that has a portable drill from a Home Depot, I'm like, that looks just like the battery pack that you put in there. But the internal hydraulics that are with it, it's just amazing that the battery powers that. And we got those, I believe, for a grant. It's been about 10 years now, or pretty close to it. And so, again, when we talk about is it so far-fetched or is it radical, And I was actually the gentleman from Warrior that reminded me of the conversion to the battery and the electric. But we're already using battery and electric-powered apparatuses and equipment in the fire department today. And as the chief had suggested, you wouldn't even dream of going back, back to the reduced capability that we had before. So, again, we're already using it today. It's not as controversial or far-fetched as you think. I think this is just the next step. And we'll use this as a pilot program and see the capabilities and the limitations, and then also provide feedback to those manufacturers so that then hopefully they can make a dedicated EV platform. Just as the 550 has kind of become the gold standard, there may be those opportunities in the future for dedicated EV platforms just for brush truck operations. So, guys, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And, yeah, very good. Let's give them a round of applause. All right. Very good. That completes staff presentation on that item. And just would like to defer back to the City Commission. I know you want to probably open it to public hearing, but if there's any questions or comments from the Commission, either myself or the Chief or the we've got the gentleman from Warrior in attendance as well. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. We'll use this opportunity to show our recognition of citizens. So if you've got any questions about what we just saw, or if you've got any other questions, please feel free to come up to the podium, state your name and address, and state your questions. You've got 5 minutes.
Good evening, everybody. David Kincaid, Lake Alfred resident. It appears that I came on the right night because I have some comments about the choice of Tesla Cybertruck and EV from brush truck. Now, I saw the news article like everybody else and had some feelings about it. A lot of people had some very big feelings about it. And that, to me, as an engineer, kind of sparks me to look deeper into a situation, because whenever there is feelings and intuition and, you know, opinion about something, you want to let the data speak for itself. And I'm not here to criticize. In fact, I want to commend the city for moving towards electrification and modernization. I think that Lake Alfred is in a fantastic position to do so, being a small town in a metro that is one of, if not the biggest growing or fastest growing areas in the country. But the choice of Cybertruck kind of made my brain itch. So drawing on my engineering experience, I went through and I did a little bit of analysis, just a little bit. Now, as far as my credentials, I have a bachelor's in electrical engineering. I'm pursuing a master's in systems engineering. I have been a car guy for life, and I am an unrepentant nerd. And on top of that, I also have 3 certifications in wildland firefighting. So this is kind of an intersection of passions for me. So I'm going to approach and give Ryan the, or Mr. Lovingood the
Copy of the report. Awesome. Thank you.
And just go over a couple of points. Now, this is called an analysis of alternatives. It is a full engineering, rigorous, structured, transparent, and evidence-based report that looks at, in this case, 5 different vehicles as options for the brush truck. One of them is an F-250 Super Duty, standard gas-powered vehicle, and the other 4 are the dominant EV trucks that are on the market, including the Cybertruck, the F-150 Lightning, the Silverado EV, and the Rivian R1T. And on the green tab, you'll see the executive summary. You know, I know it's a long document, but the executive summary in the beginning and the data tables in the back kind of tell the whole story. And what I found out was that the Ford F-150 Lightning scored above the traditional gas vehicle. So we are in a position now where EVs are not only adequate for the job, they are a superior choice. You can see the other rankings in the table. The Cybertruck did not come in last.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most important things in the analysis is that none of the vehicles failed to meet requirements in any category. There were, I think, 6 categories with subcategories that I rated the functional and operational parameters on, and then I also evaluated the risks associated with each. Everything is categorized, scored, and everything goes through in full detail if you want to follow along.
Mm-hmm.
And as part of this, I also did sensitivity analysis, which is where you change the ratings just a little bit to see if it drastically changes the table. It does not. EVs are a completely viable platform for what you guys are doing. I do want to commend you guys on it. Now, this isn't trying to change anybody's mind. This isn't trying to say, oh, you should have done a different platform. What I just wanted to do was provide this type of analysis so that moving forward, when the city goes through any modernization initiatives or anything like that, you have a framework to see what a full analysis of alternatives would be across any of it. And at the end of it, there is also a testing and validation section that you can use as you are evaluating the electrical platform, the EV platform, to see, is it meeting your expectations and do you need to recalibrate for any external factors?
That sounds great.
If there are any questions, I can address them. Otherwise,
I'll scan this and send it out to the city commission. And the next time we do anything with electricity involved, I'll give you a ring beforehand. This is just in-depth analysis, very technical. I'll probably call you later in the week on it if you don't mind. And just kind of you have me walk you through it. And that's the thing, too. And I know the chief has a passion for it. It prompted me to do my own research and studying. Nothing to this level technical ability. But just kind of getting through, just understanding how fast the technology has moved even in the last, 5 years into where now it's not only is it competitive, but it's actually outpacing, the traditional methods or models. And again, going back to the example of the extrication equipment, there was a day when that was controversial, where there was skepticism and just no one thought it was going to work. and then you saw kind of the setup and the lead time, and then you're also hoping that you don't have a hydraulic leak or that the backup, the generator is going to work. So there's a lot of limitations with that prior system. And then, you know, bam, you just slap that battery pack like it's a Home Depot, you know, portable drill, and here you are, and that thing can just cut through steel like butter. And so I think we're seeing similar capabilities coming out of the EV market. But this is fantastic, David. Thank you. Yep.
Thank you.
Yep. I
had a quick question. Do you know off the top of your head about what the cost basis was for each of the vehicles and where they ranked?
Yes, I do, actually. Just looking at MSRP, because upfitting was going to be about the same.
Right, they'd be about the same.
That would be in. The F-250 was $54.8. The Cybertruck was $82.2. The Lightning was $54.8. The Rivian was $86.4. And the Silverado was $69.1.
Okay. Yeah, very good.
Thank you.
Thank
you,
David.
Thank you.
Nate.
Okay, does anybody have any additional questions?
Sherry Parker, 450 South Clinton. Forgive me for being a little late. I am actually for the EV. I think it was a good choice that you all did decide to get it in, you know, moving ahead with progress and into the future. And I can see it being a big money saver. And as because you don't have an engine and all that stuff, you know, maintenance is going to be a whole lot less. So I want to tell you I'm for it, and I'm happy that you all did it. And it didn't come out of your all's funding. It came out of the tickets. So the feeders made donations. I think that's great. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Come on up.
State your name, please, and address.
Good evening.
Good evening.
David Joseph, 864 Griffin Avenue in Lake Alfred. Regarding, just want to touch a little bit on the rescue equipment, the new battery-operated one. Do we have any idea of what's the cost of replacement?
Ooh. Chief, you remember, we paid about $40,000 for those originally, didn't we? But that's been a while. I think it was 40 when we originally got it, but that's been
the new battery operated one.
Yeah, for the new one, and we got a grant on it originally, but yeah, I would imagine they're probably up to about 60. And that's just on the cutters. They also have like the rams and things like that. So there's different pieces of equipment that go into it.
The reason I'm asking is because machines and equipment can fail at any time, and maybe unfortunately. You don't want to be in a situation where that's the only piece of equipment you have and you're in a situation where it's in dire need and the machine fails. So do you have a backup plan, something, or alternative to that? So something to consider.
Mm-hmm.
That was my first one. My second point is that, or question rather, is what ordinance does the city have regarding the maintenance areas surrounding lakes in Lake Alfred. Eden Hills surrounding Grassy Lake, we live along the lake on Grassy Lake, and it appeared as though the common area between homeowner property and the lake was once graded by the developers when they were building, but never maintained. And it got to a point where it's long bushes and brushes and grasses beyond where the cane grass, is that what it is? Beyond that. So there, it's an area about 40 yards before you can even get close to where the lake, where water is. It's overgrown. We have been in touch with CDD, and the CDD seemed to be pointing directions that they're going to be in consultation with the city. And I'm like, okay, this is really going in circles, and I don't know if that was brought to the attention of the city or not.
I think so.
but I just wanted to check and see if there are any ordinances regarding the maintenance of common area.
We can check on it in detail and follow up with you. The once you get into the lakes and shoreways and things like that, it's very tricky because you've got state regulations, state jurisdiction. If it's a regulated, you know, state water body, the city typically doesn't have too much. We allow, I think, exemptions for, like, if you've got, like, a dock or something, we can allow for clearance in so many feet of either direction of it. But beyond that, I don't think we have any direct maintenance standards. A lot of that gets delegated to the state. But why don't I do this? And I don't believe the CDD has reached out to us, but we've got your contact info. Let me do a little bit of homework, and you're specifically talking about Grassy Lake?
Grassy.
Yeah, let me get the details on that that particular lake, and then we'll follow up directly with you and get you the info.
There are other lakes in that area.
Okay.
I was just, you know, talking specifically about Grassy Lake, but I'm sure there are other owners on the other side who might have similar concerns as well.
Yeah, the extent, I know from the community development side, the only time we really get involved with the lake shore clearing is when that you've got a dock. And then it allows so much clearance. But then also, too, we've had other property owners where they've gotten into trouble because they've gone in and cleared the whole thing. And they're not violating necessarily city ordinances, but then the water management district gets involved, and they'll come in and either heavily fine you and or make you restore it. So, yeah, it's one of those things where better to measure three times and cut once.
Yeah, and I just wanted to make sure that, because CDD said they're in consultation with the water district as well as the city.
Okay.
And I want to make sure that you guys are aware as well, because I'm asking, what I'm really asking them to do is to come on over and do a walkthrough with us.
Okay.
So maybe the city can be part of that
walkthrough. We can definitely help facilitate, and we've got good contacts with the water management district that we work with directly. And so we can facilitate that or pull it together and maybe even do a walkthrough down there.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Uh-huh.
I know the bigger lakes like Lake Haines are maintained by the FWC. So that would be another organization you could contact. I'm not sure whether Grassy Lake would come under. I would assume it would because they do all freshwater and wildlife. So that would be a place to start.
Yeah, we'll pull it together and follow up.
Okay, is anybody else? Yes, ma'am, come on. Hi, just state your name and your address, please.
My name is Tammy Langley, and I'm at 1108 Griffin Avenue, so I'm also on Grassy Lake.
Mm-hmm.
I have a different situation because I moved here from flood zone A in St. Petersburg to be able to live in a house that will not flood and is not in a flood zone, okay? So, unfortunately, in between Grassy Lake and my house, there is a retainage pond, and it's actually like acts as a drainage ditch. When it fills up, the water goes in through the storm drains, and it goes into the ditch, and then it flows down east, and it drains into the lake. So one day in August, the street in front of my house was flooded because the storm drain in front of my house drains from the east, it drains from the west, and it drains from Newfoundland Avenue, and it all pools right there. And I have an electric vehicle, and in St. Petersburg, they tell you, don't get your battery wet. Okay? Like, we went through Helene and Milton, and we know if you get your battery wet, it's big trouble, because I actually had a neighbor that had to get their house demolished because their house caught fire because they had an electric vehicle in the garage, and it looked like a bomb had gone off. So my concern is that you're going to need a bigger moat, okay? We really need to dig deeper there. I don't think you can go wider because it comes right up to the backyards. But I feel like if it is deeper, then it will hold more water and eventually drain, because on that particular day it was all the way to the top, and it looked like a raging river in my backyard, and that's pretty scary.
Mm-hmm.
And also, in the neighborhood, they have the there are no electrical poles. All the electricity is in the ground. Okay, so I asked Tico. I said, "Well, what's going to happen if those get wet? Because the water was a third into my yard. So what's going to happen when the electrical part gets wet?" And they don't know. They said they don't have enough experience with that. So I need. I'm actually writing a letter also with more details, because I need to make sure that the storm drains are cleared, that there are more storm drains installed before it gets to my house so it doesn't pool at my house, and also to make sure that it's deeper so that the water flows down like it's supposed to, like it has been doing, but in a situation where we have like an extreme rain event, like a large rain event, when you have so much rain in a short amount of time that everything just fills up, that it doesn't fill up into my house, okay? Because I'm in my 60s, and I moved out here so I wouldn't have to go through that, because I had to evacuate 7 times in the 9 years that I lived in my house. I was under mandatory evacuation. And I don't want to go through that again. It's very exhausting.
Okay.
You know, it's exhausting. You got to load your car, your mom's ashes, your dogs, get your son to pack all his stuff, put everything up high. You have to turn the power off before you leave, because if your house floods, you can't have power on, because it can get into the electrical socket. They can cause fire. And so it's very concerning. And the other thing I'm concerned about is with the Publix being built out there at the 557 and Old Lake Alfred Road, and then eventually I imagine they're going to build more houses across the street from the Publix. Mm-hmm. Where is that water going to drain into? Is it going to go into Lake Alfred? Is it going to go into the storm drain system that goes into Grassy Lake? Where is that water going to go? I just really want to know, because I don't want it coming into my house.
Yeah, the best thing to do, and we can have... we'll get your contact information.
Okay.
One of my staff members in the back will get it, and then we can follow up with you. And the best thing for us to do, because we're talking about stormwater and slopes and all those things, I mean, we can have the city's engineer take a look at it, and then maybe even, you know, wait for a rain event and go out there and actually put eyes on it and see
right.
what's happening.
Well, maybe when you come out to look at the grass,
yeah.
You know, the buildup. I don't mind the buildup of the grass. It's dry right now, though, and I can see why he would be concerned that it might catch fire or something like that, you know, because there's a lot of grass. For me, it's like the grass is protecting my house from getting flooded.
Mm-hmm.
But... you know, I know it's supposed to go to certain, it's supposed to have a certain grade and everything. You might need, if you do dig deeper, you might need to, like, you know, make the storm drain go lower. I mean, I don't know. I just want it to work the way it works, but hold more water. That's all.
Well, we'll need to look, so I can have them look, because the stormwater system, you know, the ponds and all of those things, the permits with the community, the CDD or the subdivision, and then so are the ponds and things like that. But what we need to do is have the engineer look at it.
Okay.
And see how it was designed, and then
right.
And then just kind of get his take on it. Like, it sounds like you've got an issue, so but I want them to look at it and just see.
I asked Meritage Homes, because they built my house, and they told me I had to get with the city on it, that it wasn't like an HOA or...
Maritime. Now, are you in Eden Hills or are you in the Springs?
I'm in Eden Hills. I'm like on Griffin.
Okay.
On like Grassy Lake is my backyard.
Yeah, well, I'll have the engineer look at it, and if you can just, we'll have my staff get your contact information, and then we'll reach out to you and at least have the city engineer take a look at it and just, you know,
right.
Put eyes on it.
I have flood insurance because I know better. I have flood insurance.
Yeah.
You know, because people used to think I was crazy when I would evacuate every time we were under mandatory evacuation. And then Helene came along, and they're like, oh, that lady's not crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Because it happens, right? So there's several houses along that drainage. There's probably about 10 10 to 12 houses just on along that one.
Okay.
You know, and
we can take a look. The Publix and the other development, all stormwater is required to have on-site, like, retention and attenuation.
Right.
So anything that would go into the lake would technically be like an overflow event of the pond.
Okay.
But those houses wouldn't drain towards you. They would drain more towards Lake Alfred, would be my guess.
Okay, good.
And again, I'm not an engineer, but I just know that it goes down. Water likes to go downhill, and so it's downhill to the lake.
Right, but Tallahassee Lake's down here hill and closer, though, to where the Publix is going to be built. That's why I wanted to know if it was going to...
You know, we've got preliminary concept designs. I can take a peek at it. Or I'll have the engineer take a peek at it and relay your concerns, and then we can reach out to you and maybe meet out on site.
I don't want my stuff to get damaged.
I'm a St. Petersburg native. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Thank you for coming up. How are you doing? Please state your name and your address, please.
Hi, my name is Kim Bodner. My address is 341 Cedar Glen Drive. I live in Magnolia Ridge community. I've been a resident of Lake Alfred for almost 8 years now. I moved to this town because it was a small town, and I wanted that. Now, a couple years ago, they built the courthouse and the tax collector. I know that they are also in Lakeland, Davenport, Bartow. Y'all been to those cities. You know what those cities are like when there's a tax collector there. Now we're going to get a Publix. What I'm afraid of and what my question is, how big does Lake Alfred plan on getting? Because I don't want to be in Lakeland or Bartow or Davenport. That road 557, when I first moved here, there was no light there by the schools. In fact, you could just come down that road, make a left turn or make a right turn or whatever with no problem. Buses could get out even. And then I've seen this development with Eden Hills and all that back there. And now I saw all those groves go away. And I mean, is the plan of this city to turn into another Bartow? Can anybody answer me that? Why do we need a Publix every 15 minutes? I mean, people move to a small town because you want to live in a small town, not because you want all the conveniences of a big city.
I guess I would just say to you that, you know, we were 6,000 here for years and years. And with the growth in the last 3 to 5 years has brought us up, we're just approaching 10,000 right now. I don't think the city's anticipating being a Lakeland or a Bartow as far as size-wise. We are, I think, planning ahead, far enough ahead, that we feel like the growth north of the railroad tracks is going to, it's going to require the additional roads. It's going to require widening certain roads. But the city, since I've lived here, I retired in 18 and moved back here, and I had no intent of this, but Lake Alfred is, like you say, it's a quiet little town. I remember my first conversation with Ryan was, you know, do you get upset when somebody compares you to Mayberry? Well, I kind of like Mayberry, and that's what we don't want to lose. We don't want to lose that. But I also have to say to you that we don't control necessarily what can come in. We obviously, and Ryan probably knows this better and may be able to explain it better, but, you know, it's kind of like if you build it, they will come. And right now we are in the middle between Orlando and Tampa, and we're looking for affordability of housing. And we've got an affordability, not a problem necessarily here, because if you look at what the same house costs in Tampa or Orlando that you can buy here for in the three for an entry level house is just unheard of back when I was trying to buy a house. So it is the problem, but that's what's happened since, you know what I'm saying?
Problem. You have houses that are cheaper than Tampa or Orlando, and people move here.
Right.
And then they're like, oh, we need a Publix down the road, or we need this and that and this and that.
Well,
and then they build it. Now, I mean, you guys do have some say in who sells the land, don't you?
Well, not really. Not really.
Let me weigh in. What happens is when people own property, they have property rights. And when they come and they say they want to build some houses or they want to build a Publix, if we say no just because we don't want that here, they can sue us and they will win. Because when the state gives people property rights. So if they, what we can do as a board is maintain sustainable growth where we only allow so many homes per acre, or we have to have them have aquifer recharge and open space and that sort of thing. We did change our land code so that we did have a better sustainable growth program. But when it comes to people who have property and they want to develop it, the state ties our hands to stop them. We can't just say, well, we don't want any more houses here, because then they'll just sue us and then we all have to pay. So it is a dilemma, a problem, and we can only try to maintain it as best we can.
Another scenario, just to piggyback on that or add to it a little bit, being a business owner in the city and a resident, the best analogy that I've seen or heard is if you and the neighbors get together and form an LLC and buy these groves and land, you control what happens to it. But outside of that, because these are private areas, if families don't want to no longer have possession of it, they sell it, whatever that new person comes in and does is not out of their control.
So there's like no vote or anything for that?
Not up here.
Not here?
Not amongst us. I mean,
is there like a vote in the community available before something like a public is?
No.
Entirely up to that private landowners?
I think that's the big misconception right now of people come to us and say, when did you go out and ask Publix to come in here? We didn't.
That's not what
happened at all.
Okay. So we've talked about it, and many times it's very frustrating. It's frustrating, I think, for members of the board and even for staff. I mean, I've often said if there was a big spigot on I-4 where we could just kind of crank it and only determine, if it was up to me, the city commission would determine the number of permits that are going to be issued in a year, and we would auction them off, and then they go to the highest bidder. And if my state rep was in the room, I would tell them the same thing. They don't allow that. They absolutely don't allow that. So the way to look at it is property rights. And it's a tough analogy, but I want you to kind of pretend like it's your own house or your own backyard. You have development rights on your own property. So when you build a shed or you build a swimming pool in your lot, you're actually developing your property. There are rights and there are entitlements per the code that allow you to do that. Now, you have to meet setbacks and certain things, but that's you effectively developing your property. When someone owns 100 acres, though, they can do a lot more than just build a shed. And so what I always like to we can get very complex in land development code, and we could bring the planners out here. And if you had trouble with insomnia, you wouldn't after listening to all the planners go through the land development code. But at the end of the day, I always like to say, if you see vacant land and it's not wetland, the question is not, will it stay that way or stay that way forever? Is it going to be commercial? Is it going to be industrial, or is it going to be residential? Because in the state of Florida, it's going to be one of those three things. And if they own the property, they have rights to do. So again, we can kind of choose maybe what goes where to an extent, but you can never just say, hey, we've had enough. Lake Alfred's closed. Florida's closed. Have it be nothing. Now, what I do like to come back to, though, is if you pull up an overhead map of Lake Alfred and you were to zoom out and you see all of that green and all of those lakes and all of that wetland, we're actually in much better position for your concerns than a Bartow or a Davenport or anything else. Mm-hmm. Because when you're driving at 557, yes, you may see that Publix or you may see that housing going in, but you can also see the tree line from the road. And that tree line is the wetland, and there's not going to be any development in that area. Whereas when we're driving on 27 and you're driving by Davenport or going up to Claremont or through Bartow, when you see them developing, they're developing all the way to the horizon. They're developing, that land just goes and goes and goes, and so you've got more development feeding into those main roads. So Lake Alfred will grow. There's no way around it. The city's job is really to plan for and process the growth. Now, I will say I feel like we've gotten about 20 years worth of growth in about 5 years or maybe more. And so when that happens, it's a shock to your everyone's system. You're not used to it. So we took about 20, 25 years of growth, and we crammed it into 5 years. And that's the pain and the frustration that everyone's experiencing, especially on our roads, because roads, you can't snap your fingers and do a road project. That 557 project, I remember the county announcing that in 2019 that it was fully funded and it's our number one priority. And here we are 8 years later and they still haven't taken the first shovel full of dirt on it. So that gets me, that's also frustrating. But Lake Alfred, even though we will probably double in size from here, now it might take 10 years, it may take 15 years, we cannot physically grow into a Bartow or a Davenport or a Haines City. So we will always be the relatively smaller town compared to everything else that's going on around us. The way that I like to look at it is it's kind of like, if you're familiar at all, like with Windermere over in Orlando area, they have a very similar topography where there's large lakes, and then they're kind of like the little landmass in between. I think Lake Alfred will have an opportunity to turn into something like that in the future, but unfortunately growth is part of it, and really the city's just doing the best that we can to prepare for and absorb that growth. But most certainly there's growing pains. I understand your frustration, and I share it sometimes when I'm sitting there at the stop sign on Haines Boulevard trying to turn on the Shin Boulevard. So I feel it.
I think we had three lanes going one way, or this way and this way. It was the same amount as I-4. I-4 yeah. had three lanes this way and this way. I was like, that's just weird to have to do a small town. But that was my other part of the question was, once these private landowners sell their land and then these big companies like Publix come in, who's then responsible for those roads? How do we, is that Lake Alfred's then job to have to widen roads and add stoplights and people have to deal with the traffic? Like just coming out of that light by Discovery Heights, the academy down there.
Yeah.
It's backed up from there all the way up to the Lake Alfred Light.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so a lot of it's going to be state and county. So everything, the road through town here is the state road. And so we're working with them to try to put in signals and also do a road conversion lane diet. Because if you think about downtown, there's only two lanes coming into us from any direction, but then it widens to three lanes with two turn lanes. It's like the Indy 500, which also part of why we generate so much ticket revenue, because precisely as you're getting into town, you speed up.
Yeah.
So we're trying to work with the state on that. It's a miserable experience dealing with FDOT. If you ever want to talk about bureaucracy, deal with the Florida Department of Transportation. But we're fighting the good fight to try to get them to do that. On the county road, though, where the Publix comes in, they've actually negotiated an option, and from what I'm hearing, is that they're going to try to have the signalization and their area done by April of next year is what I've heard. And so they've paid a premium to advance that because that road project's going to start this year and it's going to take 3 years to complete.
You're talking about the widening of 557?
Yeah, the widening of 557. So because the Publix wants to open before 2029, their roads have to be done and in place before they can open. They need the signalized intersection. They need it widened. The houses that are going to be built there that I know the other resident was concerned about, they're going to widen Old Lake Alfred Road, like going back to Cass, which I know that's very narrow as well. So Eden Hills, they'll kind of widen that portion of it up to where the commercial development is. And then the commercial development, Publix, they're going to widen the rest of it up to 557 and then also put in the signalized intersection. So they'll have to do that. The county will then maintain it. But at some point, I could see the city maybe taking Lake Alfred Road for us to city maintain it in the future. But the development would make all those improvements.
Yep. And I just had one quick comment as well, and I thank you, and we, everybody up here definitely respects where you're coming from. So every one of us, when we have, at least I can speak for myself, whenever we have something like that come on the agenda, you know, that's always the first one. Well, what's coming in? But unfortunately, as Mrs. Daly said, we can't even ask that. All we're basically bound by is, okay, is this consistent for the future land use, the zoning of that? And if we even ask, then the city attorney, you know, he kind of comes over and shuts us down real quick. So that's kind of what his job was. I will say this, and I definitely respect your opinion. I've lived here for probably 15 years, and as long as I've lived here, everyone's like, and this is not, no offense to the dollar stores, but let's get something other than the dollar store. Let's get a grocery store. So I respect your opinion, and at the same time, I want to say there's many, many residents who really do want it. Now, we didn't make the decision based on that because we didn't even know that's what was coming in. But, you know, it is, I think Ryan said the best, going up 557, there is a lot of green swamp area, so much of that is not buildable. You might see the pockets, you know, kind of go up I-4. But most of that cannot be touched. It's a state wildlife preserve. So we kind of try to balance it all out. But I'm sorry that Publix is coming, but they, even Commissioner Moss made, you know, that was one of his trademark things too. He's like, no, I just want, you know, we want to get a, you know, grocery store. It didn't have to be Publix, but.
Well, I'm glad it's not a Walmart.
Yeah, so we are kind of bound by that future land use and zoning, but. I think it will be a good thing long term, as like the city manager said. I've been up here since the same time, and it was approved. That widening was approved many years ago, and it was fully funded. So, if it was us, we've already, you know, got started on it. But we, you know, there's only so many things that we can control.
Yeah. And unfortunately, where my house sits, it's not too far from 557, and the sirens every night.
Mm-hmm.
So many more police sirens. I don't know if it's fire, ambulance, police, I don't know. But a lot more sirens over the years.
Wow.
Okay, thanks, guys. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Rob Parrish, 1626 Newfoundland Street. I just wanted to make a quick comment on that, because I am in agreement that, you know, I love the small town feel. We moved to Lake Alfred last April, and that was one of the big draws for us. One thing my wife and I were discussing recently around that kind of just helped open my eyes to, I guess, the future and the growth of the community, is that we have three children, and at some point they're going to move out of the house. And they have to have somewhere to go. And we would love them to stick around here, you know, so they could be close to us, and then they have kids, we got grandkids close by. That would be awesome. So, you know, just thinking about that situation and, like, well, what do we tell them? Hey, there's no more growth in Lake Alfred. There's no more homes. You can't buy anything. Like, you got to get out. You know, I don't want to tell them that. I would love for them to have the opportunity to live here if they want to. And if they want to purchase a new home at some point, they could do that. So thinking about it with that lens, it really opens my mind to growth is inevitable. It's going to happen because, you know, you do have population growth, as well as people moving in from out of state. So I want to keep the small town feel as well as so many other people do that I've talked to. So it really comes down to, how do we grow well? You know, and how do we keep that small town feel with the growth? So I appreciate what you all are doing in regards to that, because I know a lot of you have the same sentiment, and you're very guarded around that as well, and you work with what you can do, bound by the laws of the state and everything. So I just wanted to share that perspective that we've been thinking about and discussing recently.
Thanks, Rob. One thing I do want to bring up too, and at this point, and we're not shutting this off if you've got questions. We are blessed in this town, frankly, to have our city manager on top of things as he is, as far as planning for growth, planning 10 and 20 years out. And yeah, if he plans 20 and it happens in 7, that's not his fault. It's the nature of the beast with whatever caused our population to bust. So I still feel, though, that we are ahead of the game much more so and have more control of it than people here really realize. I mean, to be a 10,000, and really it's a pass-through town. We don't have a lot of business. You know, we'd love to have more because I think our population here does look for things to be able to shop at home, eat at home, you know, find a place in our hometown. And we're doing that little by little. Ryan and I have been talking about, you know, what would be the best way if we wanted to put this kind of a restaurant or something like that. I mean, it just, you know, we're always thinking about that. And again, with confidence, I feel we can grow and we just have to be patient. And, so I'm comfortable with what he has explained to us as the plans for the city, the 10-year plans. And beyond that, though, I would open it up to you to just, if you want to close that line of questioning. I feel we've got a new water plant going on out there. We have plans for fire and police substations out there because north of those tracks, you know, you get a train go across here, you've got to be able to take care. That's all on his resume from things that he's been doing here for 13 years almost.
I'll cover it from the staff side. So I really look at it as cities are really ultimately in the business of providing services. Okay. If you think of all the departments that we have, police, fire, parks and rec, public works, that's really the 95% of what we do. The mayor knows I would often joke, you know, like, yeah, we just don't have enough public participation. And I would say, Mr. Mayor, if you really want public participation, we can shut down the water plant like 2 days before the next commission meeting. You have as much public participation as you could have ever dreamed of. It'd be standing room only. And so I say that tongue in cheek because it's a joke in the sense that we've got 10,000 people in Lake Alfred. You know, there might be 50 people in the audience tonight. Thank you all for coming out. But there's not 10,000 people here. And if you go to the city of Lakeland with 100,000 people, their commission chambers aren't too much bigger than this. They can't fit 100,000. They'd have to have a whole football stadium. And so when you look at it that way, it's like most people don't think about the services that we provide. And we want them to kind of take it for granted in a way. The trash magically gets picked up. Water comes out of the faucet. The toilets flush. And so when I look at it, so much of what we do on the city side is planning to provide those services. So most of the master plans that have come through this commission in the last 10 years have gone to that effect. Transportation, utilities, parks and recreation. We just did the public safety facility plan. A lot of it is just providing for that customer base and preparing for it. Within that context, there are opportunities. You know, we're talking about comp plan amendments, downtown 2.0. We just had a presentation here, I believe it was the last meeting, when they talked about the downtown property and what that could be for downtown. So the way I look at it is you can put your stones in the river. You know, that water is coming down that river no matter what, and we can put a couple of stones here and there and kind of direct the flow a little bit. We can't control it, but we can guide it and we can influence it. And the further we think ahead, the easier it is to make a change. It's almost like if you're flying from Tampa to Los Angeles, if you turn a couple degrees early, you can change your destination and your course. If you wait till the last second, it's just not going to work. And we've seen that with water planning and everything else. So it's a team between staff and the elected officials and the community. The thing I love about Lake Alfred, though, is we're everybody's neighbor. When you talk about Griffin Avenue, when we talk about Haynes Boulevard, everyone knows what we're talking about. And I think if you go to an Orlando or a Tampa, you lose that at some point. To where, like, I just don't know where they're talking about. You know, you could have lived in Tampa, never been on that, I don't even know where that is. And in Lake Alfred, we have that. And the good news is, no matter how big we get in Lake Alfred, we're going to hang on to that. Mm. Because we're not going to turn into Bartow or Winter Haven or Lakeland. We don't have the land mass to do it. So very blessed to be in Lake Alfred, and we'll do the best we can with it.
If you... Yeah. Yeah, if you would just state your name again, just so we know you came back
up. Amy Langley, 1108 Griffin Avenue. I
I've been picking up trash in the along the old Lake Alfred Road and along Cass Road, and it'll build right back up. And I know that one of the reasons I came to Lake Alfred is because when I was looking for a house, my sister and I went to Sebring, we went to Sahane City, and Lake Alfred was the nicest area. Okay?
I agree.
By far.
Absolutely.
Nicest area. We could keep it that way, but there's a lot of trash, so maybe as an additional revenue, if there are fines for people that litter, like along old Lake Alfred Road, there's people that dump trash out there. Maybe that's another source, you know, maybe a campaign to keep, you know, Lake Alfred clean. Because when I grew up in the 60s, we didn't have a trash problem. But then we didn't have plastic. We had Tupperware, and that was it. And all the sodas and everything came in glass bottles, and you could recycle the bottles, and we would get bottles, and we would, you know, turn them in and get money and, you know, save up for whatever, going to the movies, stuff like that. But I just feel bad that, you know, the kids have to look at a lot of trash.
No, you're right. You're right. You know? And again, I was code enforcement officer here before I came on the commission.
Okay.
And one of the things that bothered me the most is I'd be driving around just doing my thing that day,
right,
and you come upon something like that. But there's a lot of, and there's a lot of places here that you're on a county road and it's not a city road, so it's not Lake Alfred's place to
right
do that, but you feel like, you know, I got to do it. Then the county comes out with their lawnmower and they just drive through it, and they've got 10,000 pieces of trash.
And then the plastic bags
right
go floating across
right
Lake
so
Alfred.
So,
and if Publix is going to be there, there's going to be more plastic bags.
Well,
I
have to feel, honestly, I have to feel that what's going on out there is going to take care of itself. I think people are going to have that pride of ownership.
Okay.
I really do.
Well,
and
I hope that Publix doesn't have plastic bags. That's what I hope.
Well,
because they fly right towards the lake.
Yeah.
You know.
And that's, I don't control that, but I mean,
okay,
Publix is Publix, you know, and it's
mm-hmm
from, but it's, you know. We'll
okay
we'll worry about that, I suppose, but
well,
but I do feel like, you know,
they need to get with the program, because if you guys can get a fire truck that's an EV fire truck, then Publix can get rid of their plastic. That's the way.
There you go.
Okay. All right. So, anyways, keep.
Thank you
keep
for your time this evening. All right. Anything else? Okay. Then we will move forward to our special recognition. And at this time, I would like to ask Amy Parrish to come forward. And I would also like to have our city clerk, Linda Bourgeois, go down and introduce Amy a little better to you and why Amy is here to share with us this evening. So, Linda, if you'll get down there and do that and kind of tell people, well, when she gets done, tell people, state your name and your at no. But tell the group here what you do with the DAR and then how this all came to be, please.
Yes, thank you, Mayor Fuller. My name is Linda Bourgeois, and of course I'm the city clerk for the city of Lake Alfred, but I'm also the regent for the Lake Wales chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution. And the Daughters of the American Revolution does good citizen awards, we do leadership awards, and then we also do American history essay contests, and those are for the 5th, 6th, and 7th, and 8th graders. And then this year we did high schoolers. And so I would like to introduce Amy Parrish. She actually won first place in our high school essay contest, and she'll be submitted for a state contest. And if she wins in state, then they go to national. So it's my pleasure and my honor to introduce her to read her American History Essay Contest, and especially with it being America 250. This is, and it was really heartwarming, and I'm going to turn it over to you so you can go ahead and read the essay.
Okay, so I wrote about Peter Francisco, and this guy, I don't know how he's not in the history books, but when you hear his story, it's so a God thing.
Hey, Amy, before you go, tell a little about what the nature of your essays needed to be? It needed to be about the people that signed.
So, excuse me. My essay needed to be about an American hero of the revolution. And we know a lot of people are going to pick stuff like Paul Revere and Patrick Henry. And we're just, my brothers and I are sitting there and we're thinking, we're not going to do someone that everyone knows. We're going to dig deep and find someone that's not well known. And so I found this guy and I'm just like, I have to write about him. So, Peter Francisco was an unsung hero of the American Revolution. This man was responsible for many victories for the Americans. He was a one-man army, soldiered through many years of hardship, and was a fighter and patriot from a young age. This is the story of a boy who encountered a tragedy when he was young, but did not give up. Peter Francisco was born on the island of Terceira, which is part of the Azores Islands, about 950 miles away from Portugal. Peter was playing ball with his sister when he heard a bird chirping that sounded like an Azores buzzard, a rare and exotic bird. While Peter was searching for the bird, he ran into two sailors who lured him away with a rarity on the island, candy. The sailors promptly covered his head with a burlap sack, and one tossed Peter over his shoulder, running down the hill to the wharf. On June 23, 1765, their ship docked in the James River of Virginia, and the sailors left Peter on the docks, where he was found by the night watchman, old Caleb. He noticed that the boy had two silver shoe buckles with the initials P.F., and was hefty for his age. Peter was given a home when a local judge, Anthony Winston, hired him as an indentured servant. Peter grew at an alarming rate. At the age of 12, he weighed 200 pounds and was over 6 feet tall, and by 15 was 260 pounds and 6 foot 6 inches tall. In 2026, he would make a great NFL linebacker, but back in 1775, the average height of a full-grown man was 5 foot 9 inches tall. In March of 1775, Judge Winston took Peter with him for the meeting of the Virginia Convention at St. John's Church. As an indentured servant, Peter wasn't allowed to go into the meeting, but once the convention started, Peter sneaked to the side of the building and opened a window. Patrick Henry was delivering his vehement speech that would later become famous, and Peter listened intently as Patrick ended with these words. Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death. Peter was so impassioned by Patrick's speech that he expressed his desire to join the militia immediately. Judge Winston was enthralled by Peter's desire, but mentioned that Peter must wait until he was 16 before he would be allowed to join. Once Peter had enlisted, he waited over 6 months before he saw battle. He was in General Howe's militia, which met with General George Washington's men for the Battle of Brandywine on September 11, 1777, at Chad's Ford, where the sun rose to the sharp sound of muskets firing on both sides. General Howe's men rushed forward to stop the British from advancing any further, defending the American rearguard and allowing them to escape. During the confrontation, Peter experienced a sudden sting in his left leg, but he ignored it in the face of the battle. When the assault finally ended, an otherworldly silence fell over the battlefield, and Peter looked down on his leg and saw blood had soaked his trousers. The sharp pain he had felt was a musket ball going straight through his leg. Peter was detached from the battlefield to a Moravian farmer's home to receive medical attention, where he met and became friends with Marquis de Lafayette, who had been wounded. Even though Peter's tour of duty had ended, he re-enlisted and was handpicked by George Washington to be one of the 20 men to attack the British fortification at Stony Point, New York, on July 16, 1779. In the close quarter hand-to-hand combat that ensued, Peter suffered a 9-inch laceration across his stomach, but continued to fight, capturing the British flag in the process and holding it against his wound. His actions helped force a surrender from the British, and Peter's bravery and fame spread across the colonies like wildfire just as his second tour concluded. He re-enlisted for a third tour. On a moonless, sweltering night on Tuesday, August 15, 1780, the Virginia militia marched to battle against Lord Cornwallis's army in Camden, South Carolina. The British were the first to attack. In a bombardment of bayonets and bullets, the militia of Virginia and North Carolina dropped their weapons and ran for safety. As Peter was forced to retreat, he spied an American cannon about to be captured by the British. Peter beat off attackers, hefted the 350-pound cannon barrel on his shoulders, and carried it off the field toward a group of Continental soldiers. Peter sat under a tree to rest when a British soldier burst out in front of him with his musket drawn and told Peter to surrender or he would be killed. Peter, appearing submissive and fatigued, said that his musket was empty and offered it to the soldier. When the soldier grabbed for the musket, Peter spun the weapon around and plunged the bayonet into the man. Later, Peter was given a 6-foot broadsword with a 5-foot blade by George Washington 2 days before the attack on Guilford Courthouse. Even though he fought bravely with his new sword, he was wounded by a bayonet, and the Americans lost the battle. After his third tour had ended, Peter was at a tavern in his town when 9 of Tarleton's Royal Dragoons wandered inside. Peter tried to get away, but was surrounded by the men in seconds and, forced to surrender, Peter was left outside with 1 dragoon guarding him. The others were inside the tavern when the dragoons spotted Peter's silver shoe buckles with the initials PF and demanded he handed them over. Peter refused to give him the buckles, declaring that the soldier would have to come and take them himself. As the dragoon drew near, Peter grasped the man's sword and in one motion slashed the soldier's head and neck. The dragoon emitted one last cry for help, signaling the other dragoons inside the tavern. When they dashed outside, they were faced by Peter, who killed another dragoon while the other 7 ran for their lives, and Peter was left with their horses. Peter Francisco was known as the Virginia Giant, the Giant of the Revolution, a one-man army. A monument was erected in his memory and stands in New Bedford, Massachusetts. These words of General George Washington are inscribed on the monument. Without him, we would have lost 2 crucial battles, perhaps the war, and with it, our freedom. He was truly a one-man army. From an indentured servant to an enlisted soldier, from an orphan to a patriot, Peter was a force to be reckoned with. Sitting under the open window at St. John's Church, listening to Patrick Henry's speech, something stirred in the heart of a 15-year-old boy. A patriot was born on that day, and his name was Peter Francisco, the Virginia Giant.
Thank you so much. And again, proud, proud, proud for you. But I'm also proud of the other 2 siblings that you share that with, and I'd like to ask, just stand at your chair, if you would, Carson and Jake. Jake, you're enrolled in this little contest as well, weren't you? And tell us where you placed. Okay, and Carson? Second place for junior high school. Middle school, okay. So again, these kids right now, these are the future of this country. This family and this family down in front here are homeschool kids, and I can't tell you how proud we are of, you know, what you do, the parents, and the engagement that you have in our commission meeting every 2 weeks. So we thank you so much for coming out, and again, take it to the next level, and we'll see you. I think you're presenting at Heritage Day, and I think all
July 3rd.
July. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. American. Oh, that's correct. Okay. Anyway, we'll look forward to that again. And thanks again for coming in this evening. Yeah.
I didn't get the green memo.
No. Stand right in front of you.
I can tell you that.
Hmm?
Perfect. 1, 2, 3. Thank you, everybody.
All right. Congratulations.
We would have had the courage to do that when they were
Okay, we'll start off with our consent agenda and move through this agenda fairly quickly, I think, for the rest of the evening. Okay, we'll start with the consent agenda. Four items on consent agenda. Number one, City Commission meeting minutes for February 2nd, 2026. Item two, City Commission announcements. Item three, purchase City Hall digital sign replacement. And item four, purchase and sales agreement for Lock Street. So again, we're in a open meeting this evening, and if you have any questions or comments about any of the consent items that I just mentioned, please feel free to come forward. Seeing none, we'll go ahead and open it now to City Commission comments, please.
Mr. Mayor, I move approval of the consent agenda items 1 through 4.
Second.
Okay, with motion and a second, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
And motion is carried. Okay, now we get to our agenda item number 1, public hearing ordinance 1574-26, Tree O' Groves annexation. And I'd like to start us off with the city attorney to read the title of the ordinance into the record, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Ordinance number 1574-26, an ordinance of the City Commission of the City of Lake Alfred, Florida, extending the corporate limits of the City of Lake Alfred, Florida, so as to include therein additional territory lying contiguous and adjacent to the present boundaries of the City of Lake Alfred, Florida, describing said additional territory, redefining the boundaries of the City of Lake Alfred to include said property, providing for incorporation of factual recitals, providing for conflicts, providing for severability, providing for the administrative correction of scrivener's errors, providing business impact estimate, and providing for an effective date, general location and area of approximately 0.036 plus or minus acres, northwest of White Road and southwest of Arbonaut Lane, further described as a parcel 262-722-000-044020 in the Green Swamp area of critical state concern.
Thank you, sir. I'd like to ask the city manager to present his analysis, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Pursuant to Florida statutes, the city may consider the annexation of unincorporated areas of a county that are contiguous to the municipality, are compact in nature, and will not create an enclave. The applicant has submitted to the city voluntary annexation petitions under Chapter 171 to request the annexation of one parcel into the city limits of Lake Alfred. This is a triangular area of approximately 0.036 acres, northwest of White Road and southwest of Arbuthnot Lane. So this is a little tiny slitter. And so basically what happened is because the area was included in a prospective development, that in order for you, you can't have a site plan outside of the city limits. So they've got to, because this area is a part of the property that they own and is a part of their site plan, it has to be within the city limits for that to be basically included. So this is more of a ministerial or a cleanup action, but it requires, we got to go through the ordinance process. The action currently before the City Commission is only on the annexation of the property into the city. If approved, establishing future land use and zoning designations will be considered in future action items presented to the P&Z Board and the City Commission. If approved on first reading, the proposed ordinance will be presented for second and final reading on March 2nd, 2026. Staff recommendation on this item is to approve Ordinance 1574-26 on first reading, and staff will be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. We're in an open meeting this evening, and if there's any questions or comments on this particular item, public hearing Ordinance 1574-26, Trio Groves Annexation, feel free at this point to come up, state your name and address. And seeing none, we'll move forward to City Commission comments.
I'd like to make a motion that we approve Ordinance 1574-26, Trio Grove Annexation.
Second.
Okay.
I had a question.
I'm sorry.
Can you zoom in again? Are we just talking about that itty-bitty corner?
Yep.
Doesn't even have a line around it.
Nope, that's so tiny.
That little, okay. Thank you. That's all I wanted to know.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, motion is carried.
Seems like a rounding error.
Agenda number two. Resolution 02-26, acceptance and conveyance of property. I'd like to have the city attorney now read the title of the resolution into the record, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Resolution number 02-26, a resolution of the City Commission of the City of Lake Alfred, Florida, affirmatively accepting the conveyance of that certain real property from Tree O Groves, Inc., a Florida corporation, to the City of Lake Alfred, Florida, as more particularly described in that certain special warranty deed executed by Tree O Groves, Inc., and recorded on January 21, 2026, in Official Records Book 13853, pages 1751 through 1752, Public Records of Polk County, Florida, and authorizing the city manager to take any and all necessary further actions to effectuate the intent of this resolution, providing for the incorporation of factual recitals, providing for conflicts, providing for severability, providing for the administrative correction of scrivener's errors, providing for recordation, and providing for an effective date.
Thank you, sir. And now I'd like to ask city manager to present the analysis, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. City of Lake Alfred is accepting the conveyance of real property from Trio Groves Incorporated for one unimproved parcel totaling approximately 4.34 acres. The special warranty deed was recorded on January 21st, 2026 in Official Records and Public Records of Polk County, Florida. The proposed resolution officially accepts the conveyance of the property. The property being accepted is a key piece, and so this is another triangle piece, although this is actually a real triangle. That's what I told the planner. I'm like, we've got two triangle action items on the same agenda. I'm like, how does that happen? So this is the triangle in question. And so this is a prospective development off of a white road. You would get to this from Experiment Station Road, but then instead when you kind of take a right to go, if you're coming down Evan House and then you were to turn, instead of turning right on the Experiment Station, this is if you were to turn left. And then you would go up White Road, and this is where the city spray field is up in this location, you know, pretty remote. Over on this side, though, this is actually the Lake Lowry development, which is already in construction. So as a part of the city's, going back to long-range planning, So the transportation master plan that we approved calls for a connection, a road connection, between these two developments, because otherwise there's no way to get access there. Because if you're on White Road here and you try to go over to where Lake Lowry is, you've got to go all the way down Experiment Station Road and then curve around on 17 and then come all the way back up. So this was identified as a key connection as a part of our transportation master plan. And so the property owner over here, they actually split this off, and this parcel was basically going to be left in limbo. So what we didn't want to have happen was, as developments go, you know, this might not happen for 5-10 years or whatever, but then everything's sold off, the LLCs are all gone, and then this piece of property then ends up in a stranded LLC, gets sold to someone else, assigned to someone else, and now the city's basically in limbo with a missing piece of the puzzle. So rather than see that happen, the city attorney and myself worked with both of the parties, and we basically got them to donate this piece of land to us. And then that will eventually facilitate a road connection, you know, if and when this development comes through. So this development here has been teed up, and their design, they have like a stub out road that will go right to the property line. And then when this one comes through site plan, we'll kind of have them tee up their road to the edge of that property, and then that'll just leave the gap, and we will own the property and be able to facilitate that connection per our transportation master plan. So that's why we've accepted it, and the resolution is just a formal acceptance by the city commission of that piece of property. And staff recommendation is to approve resolution 02-26, and we'll be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Again, being in an open meeting, we ask you if you've got any questions or comments regarding this particular item, please feel free to come forward now, state your name and address, and any question or comments. Seeing none, we'll move forward, and I open it for City Commission comments.
Is that partially a wetland right there in the corner?
Yeah, there is. So that's going to require permitting and design and impact mitigation and all of that. But because it's for a critical connection with a road, this is something that will have to be accounted for in the permitting process. I don't see this happening anytime soon, but this is part of the long-term plan.
So maybe 5-10 years, you know, just to facilitate that connection.
You know my theory about anybody who says it won't happen for 10 years as that being a good thing, that's usually not a good thing. But that's okay.
I say it that way because it's going to have a big price tag to it, and I'm not looking to setting that into the budget anytime soon.
It's only going to get bigger.
True. True. But, yeah, neither development wanted to take that bull by the horns. And so we could have forced the issue and had them kind of come into it, but then there would have been this huge – there would have had to be DAs between multiple parties with impact fee agreements and everything else. So at the end of the day, it was just worth it for us to take it.
They wouldn't split it 50-50?
But, well, they tried to carve it out and leave it in limbo, but we caught their hand in the cookie jar. So,
okay. Any other comments?
I'd like to make a motion to approve Resolution 0226, acceptance and conveyance of property.
Second.
Okay, with a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion's carried. Agenda item number 3, bid award. Haynes Boulevard, downtown project waterline relocation. I'd like to ask the city manager at this time to present the analysis, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Let's see here. The city's community redevelopment agency has a project in the current fiscal year 25-26 budget to renovate and upgrade the streetscaping, including but not limited to pavers, lighting, and landscaping on Haynes Boulevard, and this would be the portion between the post office and Las Comadres, effectively. In scoping out and preparing for the project, it was determined that much of the current landscaping is root-bound in areas that will need to be relocated. In planning for the relocation, it was discovered that the existing landscaping is directly over the water main on Haynes Boulevard. That would be on the eastern side, and that the root systems are entangled with the water main. The proposed project will replace the existing 6-inch water main along Haynes Boulevard, and that would be between basically Las Comadres and Lakeshore Boulevard. The water main being replaced was installed more than 50 years ago and is eligible for replacement. Proactively replacing the water main in advance of water breaks will reduce the risk of service disruptions, emergency repairs, and project delays. Additionally, part of the project is inserting valves on either end of the project length, which will allow for isolation of portions of the water system. This is beneficial as it will allow this portion of the main to be isolated if there was ever a need for future repairs without having to shut off much larger sections of the system. So because this is the traditional center of town with the existing water plant, all of your oldest lines are closest to the original water plant. So the closer you are to town, the older it is. And so right there on Haynes Boulevard, those lines have been in the ground 50 plus years. And so one of the challenges that we run into is when there's repairs or breaks, it's harder to isolate the section of the system because it's so close to the plant and there weren't a lot of valves that were installed then. And there's been so much work in the corresponding decades is that if you had a break, we ran into that with that fire hydrant over there where we had to shut off. We let it leak for so long because the only alternative was to shut off half the city in order to make one repair. So these inserter valves will allow us to isolate that section, which is important with the businesses if we were to ever have an issue in the future. So good project, and again, this will kind of reduce risk and then relocate it. So if you'll draw your attention to the screen, this is some of the concepts just on and this will be a separate item, but just like bulb outs and pavers and things like that, complete street design in order to reduce design speed and increase safety. You can see there. So that's basically what we're doing with the water line. So it's on this side. It's on kind of the side of the sidewalk closest to the curb. That's where the existing landscaping has been planted. And so we're going to tear that one out basically or remove it or decommission it, and then we're effectively just relocating it to the north side of the sidewalk where there's no landscaping. We probably shouldn't have planted things on top of it, you know, back in the day, but we probably, you know, that was some future guy's problem 20 years in the future, you know, when everything grew in. So that's this project. We received three bids for the project. Odom Contracting, $115,887. Trishore Corporation, $117,000. And then Conshore Incorporated, $117,700. The city has budgeted $650,000 to be placed into enterprise reserves in the current fiscal year 25-26.
budget and the project costs will be tentatively offset by this amount. If we have additional surplus revenues, we may be able to keep that $650. This wasn't a budgeted project, but we didn't realize the water main was below the landscaping until we got into scoping this out. But we do have the reserve amount there in order to absorb this expense. So staff recommendation is to approve the bid award to Odom Contracting in the amount of $115,887 for the Haynes Boulevard Waterline Replacement Project. And staff will be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you, sir. Okay, we're in an open meeting now, and you have an opportunity to address any questions or comments that you might have on bid award for Haynes Boulevard Downtown Project Waterline Relocation. You need to come up and ask.
There's no detour because this work's all going to be done on the sidewalk side, so it's not going to impact the road at all. We'll coordinate with the businesses and make sure, you know, there's minimal impact and anything. They'll open trench it where they're putting in the new line, but we'll do this all as a part of the project. So when the pavers are already torn up and we've kind of got everything in flux, that's when we'll take care of it. But we've already kind of coordinated with the businesses, and just as we get closer to that, there'll just be additional coordination. But no, there won't be a need to do any traffic detours.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you for your question.
Yep.
Okay. Any others? Okay. We'll close that opportunity and move on to City Commission comments, please.
The only comments I have is it seems like all the bidders used the same formula this time around.
They were pretty tight this time.
Very, very tight. And then you kind of answered it, but what is the downtime like for the businesses that are on the road?
So they'll put the new one, they'll run the new line in before we disrupt the old one, and then basically connect them to the new ones as we go, and then the old line will then be a deadline, and then we can just tear it up without worrying about it. So it'll be very minimal. We'll try to do the work at night so that they're not out of water for any perceivable amount of time.
Then I would just recommend sending that company over to Lakeland Hills Boulevard just to get them to fix that, because that's been going on for over a year and there's still another year. So if they can do that quick, you know, why can't they work a little faster? So thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a question on timeline. When do you want to start, and do you have an idea how long it would take?
We'll update the commission as we go, and we have another action item as a part of the CRA. But once we get all the components in, you know, we'll just be getting contractors organized to mobilize. The goal will be to have them lined up as quick as possible. I don't want to tear up the pavers and then have that sitting there for 3 weeks. Now we're waiting on the pipe guy. Yeah. I want them all kind of queued up at the starting line, and then they all kind of do it at once, just in order to minimize the disruption. But I'll keep the commission updated as to the schedule and timeline, and we'll also be in contact with the businesses that are going to be impacted.
Okay. Any other comments? Okay, would anybody like to entertain a motion?
I'd like to make a motion to approve and make the bid award to Haynes Boulevard Downtown Project Waterline Restoration to Odom Contracting in the amount of $115,887.
Second.
Okay. Just to clarify for the record, that motion would include authorization for the city manager to negotiate and enter into an appropriate construction agreement with said vendor.
Is that the fine print?
Yes, that's the fine print.
So moved.
So moved.
Thank you.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion is carried. And we move to our fourth item here for department updates. I'm going to defer at this point to the city manager.
So we have two tonight, and then we'll probably split this up over, you know, four meetings. We've got additional time, so we'll kind of space it out. But we will start with human resources. And just as a refresher for the commission as well as for the members of the public, this is kind of you guys hear from me on all the action items. This is kind of the opportunity for the department heads to come forward, give updates about their internal operations, things that may not necessarily make it forward as an action item. I just like all the department heads to kind of come forward and give from, you hear in their words, just as the updates as to their department, and then this segues right into budget. So right as we're done with the last department update, then the next meeting we get into capital. And then we're on the roller coaster for the budget process going through into August and September. So, very good. Margarita, thank you.
Good evening. Margarita Martin, Human Resources Director.
Thank you so much for this opportunity. So we have grown. HR has been a department of one for a very, very, very long time. And so I got a picture with my my administrative assistant. Her name is Jessica. And I wanted to thank the commission for approving that. It happened in October for the new budget cycle. And I just really thank you because it's made a big difference in what we've been able to do to take care of our employees. All right. So... human resources supports every single department and every single employee. Our work directly impacts how well the city functions. And in 2025, our focus has been on four main areas: protecting the city through compliance, supporting departments through recruitment and retention, strengthening training, and continuing to build a positive and productive workplace culture. For our workforce and hiring snapshot there, I put our total employees. We're at 134. That's a big number for us. And that includes regular full-time, regular part-time, and PTR employees. This gives us a quick snapshot of our workforce. Like most municipalities, we continue to face recruiting challenges.
Margarita, how many of those are FTEs of the ones full-time equivalent?
Full-time equivalents, we're about 85 right now.
85? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Roughly. It fluctuates a little bit. So, yeah. And you can see my second bullet point there, new hires in 2025 at a total of 45. There's a lot of movement. That was just in the calendar year of 2025. And before you guys, you know, gave me Jessica, thank you so much. That was me touching every single one of them, onboarding them, and working them, through the employee life cycle. And some left on their own. Some just different situations come up. Others were seasonal, a lot of seasonal employees in the summertime. And others just, not a very good fit for us at the time. But that's a big number to process through what was a department of one. So ongoing recruitment and specialized and public safety roles, that's a challenge. For example, our police officers just trying to find good candidates that are a good fit for our department. Also specialized positions like the equipment operators, like the VAC truck that we're going to be getting soon. We need someone who can drive that truck and operate it properly. So that's been, we've been looking for the right person for that. So this makes retention and development just as important as a hiring process, because we want to make sure that once we find them, we can keep them. So recruitment and hiring improvements. We continue to make improvements to our hiring process to make them more efficient and more consistent across departments. We're also focusing on hiring people who are not only qualified, but who are a good fit for the city, which helps with long-term retention. So strong recruitment is our first retention tool right off the bat. So we've streamlined applications and scheduling tools. I've automated a lot of things. I don't know if you have seen a lot of the text messages I send out to the employees just communicating, but we've structured the interview process. We focus on quality and organizationally fit candidates, and then leadership and specialized recruitment efforts. And I'm excited because one of our two, actually, they're in the room. So in 2025, we recruited and hired our fire chief, Chief Livingston, and our fire marshal, and Fire Marshal Murphy. And that was a very intentional process. It was something that we wanted to make sure we had the right fit, and I'm very grateful to say that we made it. We did it. We definitely nailed that one. So training and employee development. One of the things that I say often is you can't use what you don't understand. Training helps ensure employees actually understand policies, expectations, and available resources. This reduces the risk and helps employees do their job safely and effectively. I put up there universal employee trainings, but then we start kind of drilling down a little bit more. Supervisor and safety sensitive training, leadership development, and compliance education. And that's not, it doesn't all just come from HR. You know, I work with Linda on the ADA stuff and the records, and we'll be working with the finance for training on our purchasing policy and things like that. So HR coordinates that, but we recognize what we need, and we kind of zero in on those specialized training. And depending on which group of employees we need to focus on, that's what we do. Compliance and policy modernization. So we've also focused on updating policies and procedures. You might remember that in 2025 we did two handbook updates. We did one in February, and then we did another one in December. We needed to do that. In some ways things move really fast, and in other ways things stay the same. But at the end of the day, what stays the same is basically I want everyone to feel welcomed, included, and that they understand what's happening here as far as their employment, and then that they feel like they can meet expectations. So clear policies protects employees and protects the city by creating consistent expectations across all departments. So benefits and employee support. This is one of my favorite things. I really enjoy human resources a lot, but this right here is where my heart lives. So this is how the city, and thank you because the commission approves the budget, so thank you so much for allowing me to do this, but this is how the city takes care of our employees. The city continues to offer very strong benefits, including paying for full medical premiums for full-time employees. We also emphasize educating employees about these benefits because, again, you can't use what you don't understand. When employees know what support is available, they are more likely to stay engaged and healthy. So we have the employee-paid medical. We have the employee assistance program, the EAP, our wellness initiatives, which has gotten a lot of fun. So I've been able to figure that out where we can meet our employees exactly where they are, as individual as they are with their unique preferences. So we've been able to kind of hack that, and I'm very excited about that. And our benefits education and outreach, because it doesn't matter how many cool things we have for our employees, if they don't know how to use it, it's like just like that beautiful pink picture with all the books on the shelf. We want them to take this stuff off the shelf and use it in a way that would benefit them and their families. So culture and Clifton Strengths initiatives. This is also something I'm very excited about. One of our major culture initiatives has been using the Clifton Strengths framework with leadership and departments. We started off with Ryan and his team of department heads, and then I've worked with the finance department and Amber's leader, kind of her top, her close team that she works with on a daily basis. I know I'll be working with Chief Livingston and his top staff there, just for as far as leadership and trying to help them grow. The Clifton Strengths Finder, this helps supervisors better understand how their employees are wired and how they communicate and what motivates them. The goal is to meet employees where they are and help them feel seen, valued, and heard. Strong communication and trust within teams directly impacts retention and service to the community. The Clifton Strengths, it's a focus on what you're naturally strong at and approaching problems from the lens of your strengths. It's a really fascinating approach to just professional development, personal development, and I hope someday I might be able to put the commission through that. It'd be a lot of fun, Jack. I really would. It'd be tons of fun. So looking ahead.
My HR director takes risks.
It's just so cool when you can like say, yeah, that's how I'm wired. And that's the thing too. It's like when you feel seen, valued, and heard for who you are, you're not a mistake. You're not a fluke. You're not different. You know, it's just the way that you're wired, and it's a strength to any organization that you're a part of,
One quick sidebar, Marguerite. So we did all the department heads had to take it. I very rarely kind of pull them all together for it. And the commission's heard me talk about the Strength Finder when we do the middle school presentation. And so we went through mine, and it was strategic. But having the whole group take theirs, I mean, it was laughs all around. I mean, we really got to see everyone's, like, you know, their strength and what they thought it was. And the whole takeaway is that we,
We often talk about how we don't know what our weaknesses are, but it's usually the exact opposite. You know pretty well what you're not good at, and you avoid it, and it's always a pain point for you. But it's like we very often don't know what we're actually good at and then trying to work from our position of strength. The example I always give is like in school. Like if you were really brilliant at math, you'd probably be a horrible tutor to someone else because you'd just be like, oh, I just do it. The numbers just make sense to me. You know, it's just intuitive for that person. Whereas if you took someone like me, you'd be like, what are you talking about? I'm like, I had to study 10 hours and I still got a C. And so it's one of those things where operate from your strengths. And then I also bring it back to the football analogy is, you know, every position on the team has a different set of strengths. And so, again, we think about it's easier to kind of perceive physical strengths because we can see the differences rather than mental. But if we use the analogy of, like, there's every position on the field, you know, a wide receiver is going to have a different set of strengths than an offensive lineman, you know, or a defensive back. And now you want cross-training, you know, that wide receiver might have to throw a block every now and then. But if they did that on every single play, they wouldn't be operating from their strength and they would break down. And so the thesis is the same even with the administrative team. We want people working from their strengths because they stay energized. You can do other things, but if you're operating outside of your strength, it tends to wear you out and burn you out, and then you're just not going to be able to sustain it long term. So we had some epiphanies around the table there. Amber's number one was deliberative, if you can imagine that, the finance director. You know, I always just thought she was paranoid, but apparently that's a strength. And so the takeaway is, you know, kind of look at what other people's strengths are, realize that's what it is, and then just allow them to be themselves. And if that's not your strength, you probably need to listen to that person who is their strength. Like, okay, hold on. What are they seeing that I'm not? And then let me defer to them. And this is regardless of your position in the organization or your authority. It's really just we want people that are strong. We want people to lead from their strength, and it doesn't matter if you're the city manager or the department head or anyone in the organization. You know, good ideas can come from anywhere, and we want people working from their strengths. So thank you, Margarita, for bringing that home. And Amber, I think, was the biggest skeptic going into it, and so the fact that she did it and then took it to her staff, I mean, it was a proud moment, I think, all the way around.
Very, very happy.
So, very good.
Yeah. I'll just wrap it up. Looking ahead to 2026, recruiting and regulatory requirements will continue to be challenges, but our focus will remain on supporting supervisors, strengthening training, and developing future leaders so that the city remains stable and prepared for continued growth. So overall, our goal in HR is to protect the city, support departments, and support employees as whole people, not just job titles. When we meet employees where they are and make sure they understand the resources available to them, everyone benefits, including the residents we serve. Thank you very much.
Very good.
I think it's important to state for the record that Ryan has since fixed those math problems that he has for purposes of the budget.
Right. Hey, it always balances, you know.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor and City Commission, and also the residents. My name is Linda Bourgeois, again, and I am the City Clerk. I also have my hat in ADA here at the City, as well as special projects. I'd like to begin my presentation by first introducing everyone to Lita O'Neill. Lita O'Neill is the Deputy City Clerk and the Executive Assistant to the City Manager. She wears two hats in our city. Lita came to us in January of 2025, but I just want everyone to know she's such a detail-oriented, reliable person. She's very humble and kind-hearted. I mean, Lita exhibits a lot of professionalism for our organization, and for that I'm very grateful. Thank you for being here tonight, Lita. Okay, so some of the accomplishments we did this year was we hired the new deputy city clerk, and we had a successful election in 2025.
We also did the Constitution Week and the Florida City Government Week displays at the library. We actually tackled the America 250 state grant. This was something that we decided that we wanted to do for an event that, with the help of Emily and Aubrey, we're going to have an America 250 event on July 3rd, and there'll be more information coming out, but we will be unveiling a monument in our memorial over at Frank C. Gardner Park, and it's going to be a Revolutionary War monument, so we're really excited to have that addition coming to the city. So here's some pictures of the America, well, this is the Constitution Week display, and then the actual photo of the city manager accepting for Government Week. We have training, and we've done records management, signature verification training for the election, social media training with Sam Tolles, Americans with Disability Act training, Florida Association of City Clerk training, and also the International Institute of Municipal Clerk training. So we're constantly doing education within our department to make us better to serve you. Some of the ADA accomplishments we've done, we had the Community Development Block Grant at Gardner House, and we did an entrance ramp and ADA parking in the back. We did the Lake Alfred Historical Society handrail project. We did a sidewalk project on Lakeshore Way, and that was for the lavender and lace. We did a ramp and entrance and handrails at the police department, so that was Operation PD. We did the Central Park Playground ADA swing, and, of course, that was Emily's project. She did an awesome job there. Fire department, we have the intercom lowered for ADA accessibility. Just to name a few, we are retrofitting different playgrounds and things like that this year, and we'll report more on that next year. So here is the Frank C. Gardner House over at for the CDBG project. These are pictures of the lavender and lace sidewalk project, which was a huge improvement for that particular area of the city. And then we have the handrail projects. Now, the handrail you'll see out here at City Hall, if you notice on the very, very bottom, we did the rail barriers so the wheels don't go off. The Historical Society, you can see there's steps up in the back. We caged that in so when someone went up to the stairs, they don't go off into the grass. So we've done some safety improvements there. As far as special projects are concerned, we have the bank renovation going on, the new water treatment plant, the Buena Vista pump station was done last year, the Central Park Pavilion, the CR-557 pipe installation, the Adams Barn Cass Road Utility Loop project was done, the First United Methodist Church cul-de-sac, and the public safety roofs. Now, with these special projects, I want everyone to know that while I may be a touch point, the directors actually do this, so we work together as a team, but they are the ones that have managed these projects. But I would be remiss if I didn't call out a lot of the projects that went on in 2025. And here's some pictures of the parking lot and the bank and the sidewalk connectivity to the bank from the city administration building. And then we have the groundbreaking ceremony at the John Deaton Water Plant that happened this year. And here's just an update on the water plant as it stands right now. I want to thank you for your support to the City Commission, City Manager, and the citizens. And at this time, if anyone has any questions, I'll stand for them.
Thank you. For your future ADA project, I'd love to see a crosswalk from City Hall to the admin building, especially at night when we leave the meetings. A lot of cars know they're supposed to stop when they see people on the sidewalk, and some of them do. And then the other one is there's a sidewalk project down at the corner of Ramona and Cummings that goes up to the school where it's all broken up and there's a lot of weeds and things growing. It's a smaller project, but I think it's important because it's a big trip hazard.
Thank you.
That's
I will note it for your future.
We're
actually going to be going around the city, and not this coming week, but following week, to look at places for curb ramp and sidewalk installations. Mm-hmm. So I'll make sure to note that, and we'll check that one out, too.
Thank you.
And I
know staff is evaluating the Ramona sidewalk project. So,
okay.
All right. Thank you, Linda.
All right. Thank you so much.
Good job. Thank you.
That's it for the complete staff presentation for the City Commission agenda, and just two tonight on the department updates.
Okay, perfect. All right. At this time, I would like to recess our City Commission meeting and call to order the CRA meeting and ask City Clerk Linda Bourgeois to call the roll, please.
Chair Fuller?
Here.
Vice Chair Daly? Here. Board Member Eden?
Here.
Board Member Dearman?
Here.
Board Member Robinson?
Here.
Okay, we have an opportunity to review Consent Agenda, Community Redevelopment Meetings for November 3rd, 2025, and CRA Annual Report. Again, this is an open meeting to review these items. If you have any public comments you'd like to make or any questions, please feel free to do so at this time. Okay, seeing none, we'll move forward. CRA board comments.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion that we approve the community redevelopment meeting minutes and the CRA annual report.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion has carried. Our agenda this evening is bid award Haynes Boulevard Downtown Streetscape Project. So I'd like to open this now to the city manager to present his analysis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The downtown streetscape project includes the installation of new brick pavers, decorative light poles, relocation and replacement of existing trees, and the addition of new benches and trash receptacles along the downtown corridor. The CRA project will integrate the beautification component of all three projects, including the waterline relocation and curbing reconstruction. The curbing reconstruction project will be brought forward for consideration at a future City Commission meeting to complete the project. So we've already approved kind of the water portion of it. This is going to be a complete streets aspect on the curbing, but the action item before the CRA board is on the pavers and the light poles and the landscaping. Project is intended to create a more cohesive pedestrian-friendly environment that supports downtown businesses and improves the overall appearance of the corridor. Following bids were received, so we did go out and approach several companies, and we did not receive bids from Whitehead or Hinkleman. JCR came in with a bid of $230,860. JCR has been getting a lot of the projects in town as a low bidder, and they do good road work and asphalt and those types of projects. The proposed project was included in the current CRA fiscal year 25-26 budget, with $275,000 budgeted to complete the project. So the bid that we did receive is below budget. Staff recommendation on this item is to approve the bid award to JCR Construction Services in the amount of $230,860 for the Haynes Boulevard Downtown Project. And Bren, the assistant to the city manager, he'll be running point person on this project, so that'll be a good experience and good opportunity for him. He put all this together with the bids and pulled together the scope. And this is a good project because it touches on a lot of aspects. You've got lighting and electrical, utilities. You've got the aesthetic. There's a lot of different components that have to come together for this project. So this one's been talked about for several years, and if you've seen those pile of bricks that stack up sometimes by the library, or not by the post office or the sign, this will kind of give a total revamp of that corridor and set the stage and set the standard. And then we'll look to continue that throughout the business district into the in the CRA area. And again, staff recommendations is for approval, and we'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, sir. Okay, this is an open meeting, and we'd offer an opportunity at this point for questions or comments regarding the bid award for Haynes Boulevard Downtown Streetscape Project. Yes, ma'am. I need you to come up. I'm sorry. You need to sit at a closer seat.
You're going to get your steps tonight, though. I need you to say your name and your address. I'm sorry.
Tammy Langley, 1108 Griffin Avenue.
Yes, ma'am.
Does the project include the across the street of 17, like the other half where Las Comadres is and the thrift store?
Yeah, so this is, I changed slides, I think, as you were walking up. So this is the post office side. So it'll basically cover between Shin Boulevard there on the left, and then go through to Las Comadres all the way to Seminole Avenue.
Okay. And also, is there like a parking, like a city parking lot where you can park, like if there are no parking spaces near the restaurants and the...
Yeah. So the, let me see if I can get the laser pointer. The touch thing's not working again, Linda.
He's got, okay. He's right there.
Yeah, on the parking.
That's free parking?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's city. That's a city-owned parking lot.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments, please? Okay. Seeing none, we'll close that and open for CRA board comments, please.
Mr. Chair, as the city manager has said, we live in our city. We see things. Hopefully that residents will see the benefit of what it looks like. I've been living here a long time, and I've always just been proud of our city. But if something can be enhanced, and this is an excellent project under budget, I wanted to ask city manager why they no bid just never came through or never tried to contact us.
Let me yield to I know Brent kind of pulled that all together. What was the response from the vendors on that?
The short of the long is that here at Lake Alfred we have high standards and we're very picky about our.
There you go.
So they were the last man standing when we laid out the parameters.
Excellent, excellent. And I applaud you for taking this project because it's been well requested.
We had a few opportunities to take a look at a few around the county when Brent and I went to water school, and there's a lot of great examples of what we were trying to accomplish here, and I'm really glad to see what you're going to be putting together.
Absolutely.
Okay, any other questions for...
No, I was going to say I think it's great again. I mean, six, seven years ago, I mean, the fund for this, the CRA was $60,000. So the commitment here that we need to keep continue is every 6 years we just keep adding zeros. So then we can continue to do really amazing projects like this. So I think it's just it's exciting to see this come to fruition.
Yep. Okay.
But without further ado, yes, I'd like to entertain a motion that we bid award for the Haynes Boulevard Downtown Streetscape Project to JCR Construction Services for $230,860.
Second.
And Board Member Robinson, I'm assuming that includes authorization for the city manager to enter into and negotiate the appropriate construction agreement with the selected vendor, correct?
Everything you said.
Thank you.
So moved.
So moved. Okay, with a motion and a second, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? We see none. Motion is carried. At this time, I'd like to adjourn the CRA meeting and reconvene our City Commission meeting and ask City Clerk Linda Bourgeois to call the roll one more time.
Mayor Fuller.
Here.
Vice Mayor Daley.
Here.
Commissioner Eden.
Here.
Commissioner Dielman.
Here.
Commissioner Robinson.
Here.
Perfect. All right. Going to get you out of here. Recognition of citizens. This is an opportunity to come up, and if there's any questions or comments you have on tonight's presentations or anything else you would like to talk about, this is your time. And Linda will set a clock for anybody that needs to come up. Anybody? Oh, okay. Please state your name and your address, sir, please.
I'm a Drive. It's my first time meeting, so I'm about the commission.
A question about the gas line that was installed on the routes, the 557 gas line. Are you going to hear about that? What's that?
Just, I know they were just installing that to extend their service area. Art, do we have any additional information on that one? I know they did it. And really, we're just seeing it across the board. As we've had added more houses in the area, it's made sense for whether it's internet service providers or even the gas companies to just extend into those areas in order to provide service. I think that's all it is.
Art Bodenhauer, police chief. Also noticed that not only have they done that whole area, they now are coming down Lake Patty Road to tidy up over 559. Same company is doing that, so I believe it's just for to allow more access for people to use gas versus electric in those areas.
Okay.
So, we really, that project kind of came in, took off the side of the road before we really knew what kind of pipes and stuff they were putting in, so...
Yeah, because that was all permitted through county right away. Because even though it's in the city, it's the county road. But
it goes back again to what we spoke about tonight about what who has control of what roads and what notification we get depending on you know what that road is or what decisions we get to make.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
One for you, sir. You tell me about the in our community about the parking on the wrong side of the street and blocking the sidewalk with vehicles.
Can you repeat the question?
The engineers?
Yes, sir. She can hear. My question was about the blocking the sidewalks in Eden Hills and parking on the wrong side of the street. What's the issue with that?
Yeah, I can address that also. So we're currently working city staff to strengthen up our parking ordinances to have more teeth in them. We've currently been going out and doing a lot of patrols in the neighborhoods, putting temporary warnings on the cars. And then some of it, depending on what the signage is that the HOAs and the CDDs put up, are not enforceable, depending on what the signs are. But we are having community meetings, too. We were supposed to have one this week, I believe, in Silver Lake, that the scheduling fell through, so we're going to be doing that. So we're going to be doing community meetings on all of them just to educate citizens within them. And then once we get the ordinance strengthened up enough, it's... either education through getting things done or education through your wallet. So we'd rather do it by just following what we need to do.
And we are coordinating with the HOAs for both Eden Hills and with Silver Lake.
Yes, we've had major contact with both of them about what's going on. And we've had major calls about our enforcement efforts and putting out the temporary tags. The first thing we'll do is we'll go out and tag a vehicle with a notice that just like on the windshield wiper, the second we go back and we actually use adhesive to it, to the car because it's a repeat offender. So we're working on that, try to correct those actions and just educate our citizens.
Good. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Okay. Any other people would like to come up? Okay. Okay, since there are no other recognition of citizens to hear, are you done? All done.
I complete staff presentation for the City Commission and the CRA.
All right.
Two for two.
All right, now it's time for Commissioner questions and comments. We're going to open up this evening with Commissioner Dearman, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just want to thank everyone that came to the meeting tonight. It is a pleasure that we are doing the things that we are up here to do and to listen and to be respectful to everyone. I'm honored. I meet people from all over the world that come to where I work, and it's always an honor to say that I represent and work with the city of Lake Alfred. And, oh, I've heard of that town, or I've heard of that, and it's really, really a testament of what we all do. And just want to thank everybody. Did go to the Black History event that we had at Fruitland. It was very educational, good turnout, and just happy that we're working together and we're a good group here.
Yep.
That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Okay, I'm up next. Busy couple of weeks since we last saw each other. I thought I'd help you celebrate the past Valentine's Day. I hope everybody had a great Valentine's Day weekend. We've got our TEDx coming, as we said, on the 21st. I was able to join Commissioner Dearman and City Manager and Commissioner Robinson out at Fruitland, and it was a great turnout, and had an opportunity to... Oh, that's right. You were there. Well, she was. She was. But anyway, it was a great event, and I had an opportunity to read the proclamation that I read in here on Black History Month, and it was a real special time. Those people are just like family. We've been going over there for several years since I've been on the commission, and before that when I was working as a code enforcement, I really made a lot of good friends over there, and they have not forgotten that. And so I'm just tickled to death to see the city continuing to grow and to look better and better every day. So thanks for that. Las Comadres celebrated 1 year anniversary Saturday, wasn't it? Saturday? I think it was Saturday night. Anyway, she had a mariachi band and some great things, and we're just blessed to have a business like that in our downtown area now that offers us an opportunity for places to go for dinner and lunch and breakfast on the weekends now, I guess. So, again, just wanted to mention that. And for those of you who know my wife, she had a successful elbow transfer replacement this week, and I am short on sleep. I'm doing my nurse duty about every 3 hours. I'm doing ice or painkillers. So anyway, she's doing great. She said to say hello to everybody and thank you for all your cards and your phone messages and texts and all, because she has really, really enjoyed it. It's been a tough one for her. It's her fourth right elbow replacement. So she's got some good days ahead of her, though. Hopefully this will be the last one. So that's all I've got. Thank you so much. I want to just, while I've got this, thank everybody. This came tonight. I see a lot of new faces, or you know, familiar faces that I haven't seen in here in quite a while. And specifically, David, thank you for the job you did to bring that stuff in, and I invite you to join us anytime. You know, you bring a lot of great advice, and I'd like to see that. You know, we need to hear what's going on in the city. So we always welcome anybody that would like to come in and offer their advice, their counsel, and you know, we'll just work on it together. Okay. So thanks to everybody, and I'll go on now to Vice Mayor Daly.
Thank you. I'm trying to master the art of being in two places at once. It's been like very busy times, and I'll sometimes have three events in one day, and I have to leave one early to get to the next one late, and it's fulfilling, but it's sometimes a little hectic. So I wanted to let the commission know, especially, that on Thursday the House is going to vote on property tax reform, where they are going to try to make every year for the next 10 years to drop to add an exemption of $100,000, so that in 10 years there would be no more property tax. That would go a lot faster here, because not that many houses are that expensive that they're going to get to the 10 years. But if you would all please send an email to Josie Tomko at josie.tomko@flhouse.gov. I wrote the email and got an immediate response from her staff, and they said they would give her the message. Just the message that the Florida League of Cities has been asking us to let them know what that would do to our budget in the city. And they need to hear from us. And her staff said they would definitely let her know. So if we all think that everybody else is going to be letting them know, we need to be advocates for our own income. So if you all could do that tonight, that she'll we get the message by tomorrow. And the other thing I wanted to share, this last week, Discovery High School had two of their coaches, Mercedes Sermons and Coach Bouvel, have been named
the 25-26 3A District 6 Coaches of the Year for basketball. And two of our students there, Shania Patterson and Terrell Berry, were named student athletes of the year in the same district. They're all at Discovery High School, and there's Shania had a 734 point career in basketball. So we just want to congratulate the coaches and the students that work very hard to make the basketball team exceptional. And to let the homeschool kids know that you are able to participate in sports at the schools, the charter schools. So, you know, I'm not sure you all have a full basketball team at your house, so but that's always an opportunity. But I'm real proud and want to congratulate those coaches and students of the year in Little Lake Alfred with our little high school. And that's all I have tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, Commissioner Robinson.
Good evening. Thank you. Very busy times, like Vice Mayor Nancy says, is puts a little stress on everybody, but as long as we keep moving forward, I think we can see what the city has to offer and how we can help each other to get through problems and issues and publicity and limelight and things like that that the social media brings us. So very, very excited about and very supportive and honored to be a part of a city that presents itself like City Manager Ryan does and answers and responds to the public in a timely manner. So I really think that tonight was well designed, well orchestrated. So really appreciative of that. Also, since it is Olympic season, and you know you got 41-year-olds winning gold medals for the first time, I thought that was pretty exciting. But you know these are times when people just don't give up. They work till you know they are 60s, 70s years old, and 80s years old, and they just keep going. And that's the kind of the theme that I've come to realize in February is that you just have to keep going. Don't give up. Keep one step forward, and you'll go a long way. And then be open to listen to other people's comments and ideas about the way they feel and not just be in a reaction type of environment, and just sometimes you listen and take their ideas to heed, because you good things come out of that. I mean, we got a free engineering analysis tonight.
That's from one engineer to another.
So very grateful to be here, and appreciative of everything that the city and staff and support personnel do for us. Looking forward to all the events that we have going on. Highly recommend making the calendar your boss, because it seems to be never ending. And you know, so looking forward to all that we have, especially this weekend and our first TEDx, my first TEDx that I've ever been to. So super excited about that. As well as, let's see, I need to send that email out to Rep. Josie Tomko tonight. But definitely looking forward to seeing you guys in March. Appreciate everybody coming up.
Great. Thank you. While we're talking about Josie, do we have a special election coming up in March?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So just want to make you aware of that. We do have a special election coming up, and the person that will be replacing, or the people that will be running for Josie's seat, she's terming out and going and will be running for a Senate seat.
So Josie's gone, and we're Hillary Holly is the one, and then there's another couple people that are looking. I met Hillary when I was in Tallahassee a couple weeks ago, but just be aware that we do have an election coming, and just keep your eyes open. If you have any questions, give us a call, and we'll see if we can help you out. Okay, I will close it up with Commissioner Eden.
Thank you, Mayor. As always, I want to thank both chiefs in the back and all the first responders, all the staff, the presentations. I want to thank our essay speechwriter. I mean, I feel like you guys are all going to be just have a head start in this public speaking thing, because it's for a lot of people, with the exception of Mac, it can be challenging at times. So the fact that you guys are so young,
so can I.
Yes. So, I think he could do it in his sleep. So I just want to thank you for that. It was a beautiful essay. And you didn't, I don't think you stumbled one time. So kudos to you as well. I want to give a special thank you as well to both Ryan and the fire chief. You know, you guys didn't have to do that presentation at the beginning. Didn't have to. And a lot of cities probably wouldn't have. They just said, you know what, we passed it. We got the information. But I do appreciate you guys going through that. And I don't know if we have it on there or not, but could we post that flyer to the city Facebook?
Yeah, that's why I asked. If we can get it electronically, then we can put it. City Facebook.
So I think that outreach, because you know, unfortunately, you know, you get the people that come to the meeting, and you get the people that don't. So I think that would be beneficial for the, you know, for the everybody else who couldn't quite make it. And I know, and I was going to have the question for Ms. Margarita, but she got off the stage so quickly, and I felt bad. I didn't want to ask. Whatever, you know, I'm speaking with myself up here, but I'm pretty sure the commission is on board with this. Whatever tools you guys need to be more successful, because I'm a numbers guy, so when I look at, I know some of it is for growth related, but, you know, 45, essentially a third of the workforce, you know, being added, whether it be growth or retirement or turnover. I mean, we're not alone. I think every, you know, the private sector everywhere, you know, there's always going to be turnovers. You just, you know, it's harder and harder to keep people around for a long time. But whatever you need to be successful, I enjoyed your slides, but the training, you know, and everything like that and the advancement. My question was, do you guys feel like the number one issue is pay, or what do you guys feel?
Margarita, I'll let you go first on it. It's, yeah.
I know it couldn't be Miss Margarita. There's no way it could be her, you know.
Just for the record, my number one strength is connectedness. So, connecting. I just think it's not pay. We're actually very competitive now. So thank you so much for all the changes that we've done in the budget. It's a lot, like a big chunk of it has just been changes in family, like changes in things in their personal lives. It's actually a small number that is just not a good fit. It's a really small number. Most of it is just things happening with family, moving out of the area, illness, and then a lot of part-time temporary folks.
Yeah, isn't a lot of the churn with the part-time positions?
Mm-hmm. Most of it is, yeah. And then the few full-times that are, it's just, they come down from, I could probably name off five employees specifically. They come down from up north, New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania. They come here, and then they're here with us for 5-6 months, and then they go back because of family. And so that actually happened a lot last year. But most of it, like Summer Rec, I know Emily left, but Summer Rec, that's a big staff that she has to run that program. There's probably close to 10, 12 individuals right there out of that 45. But the really neat thing is like the ones that we retain, like out of the 45 new hires, we got Lita was in that group, Bren was in that group, our fire chief Livingston and Fire Marshal Murphy, they were in that group. So it's like we are retaining the ones that are just like really meant for Lake Alfred.
Well, what would you say that, Margaret? Probably 80-90% of the core is stable. We're just seeing like that 10% churn, and some of it's endemic because you've got the park and rec. And maybe that's something we can do. We can parse out the data better, you know, to show like part-time turnover versus full-time. because that's even why I asked the question. What's how much of that was the full-time equivalent?
Mm-hmm.
But I think just in general, too, and you know, Margarita and I have debates on this, but I think you're just seeing part of it, though, is like I call it like generational, like turnover, just gap. So you've got like you've just got a large cross-section of the population heading towards retirement, and then the new generation coming in, it's more, you know, there's more mobility, there's more flexibility, you know, the days of like working 30 years and getting the plaque or the watch type of thing, that's, it's kind of like a, it's phasing out. Cities are more stable, though, than I would say the private sector. We benefit from stability, but I think you're seeing more churn just in the younger generations that are coming up as well. So
I do know that, and I learned this at the Ridge League of Cities dinner this past Thursday night while we were waiting for seating. I was talking to, what I learned was the chief of Haines City. I was discussing with him while we were waiting, and he was confirming that they just got approval to increase their pay and their, they're getting a three-day Kelly Day over there. So a lot of departments are bumping up. And he was just, you know, joking about having calling the chief of Arbondale for a recruit that they are battling over. And it was just minutes before over the phone call that the recruit accepted Arbondale and before he talked to Haines City. So there is a bidding war going out there with benefits and different levels of cities and you know, dealing with turnover and stuff like that. So the market is open, I guess, for a lot of different new hires and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure you're going to get a taste of that.
Well, and that's why I asked, because we don't want to become just a training ground. You know, we don't for that. So, I mean, I definitely appreciate all you're doing. I'm not singling you out, but that's why we have turnover, because it's everywhere. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, anything we can do on our end, as long as we're competitive.
And I will say this, we have a really good reputation. So we've been able to recruit really high talent. Four of them are in this room tonight because of our reputation. Lita had met Linda, our city clerk, and she definitely, as soon as she found out that this opportunity existed, she applied. And so with Chief Livingston, he made a phone call to our now assistant to the city manager, to Brent. Just those relationships and connections. We have a very good reputation as far as working for us. So it's working.
And over time, we have a lot of people who go away and then they come back.
And they do. Mm-hmm. They do come back. They do come back. So it does. It happens. We've got a great reputation. We've got a really nice solid base. And yes, in the areas where we need to compete, I am grateful we do. I'm able to have those candid conversations with the city manager, and where we need to compete, we do.
We've done, it's been a couple of years, but there was a time, probably like 2-3 years ago, where the labor market was running hot.
Yeah.
And so we used to do salary surveys every 2 years. We did it every year. We used to do it every 2 years and then make the adjustment the following October. So it was like a 2.5 year delay. And there was a day when that would have been considered aggressive. You would have been criticized for like, why are y'all doing salary surveys? You know, that should be like every 10 years with the census. And now we've been doing them every year. And then we moved it to where we actually carve out a sliver of the budget to where we can make mid-year adjustments. So do the survey coming off of the October data, and then be able to make adjustments, you know, going into April potentially, so that we can be more responsive. And we targeted public safety was a big focus of that in the run-up, because what would happen is you do the survey, and they'd be like, oh, they're making X in Winter Haven, 60 or whatever, and you're like, well, my data shows them at like 52. What are you talking about? And it's like, oh, well, that was so last month, you know. And then so getting that latest and greatest data. So we saw a huge run-up in the last couple of years. It's tapered out a little bit, I think, but we've remained competitive. We did retention pay in both police and fire, in addition to upping
pay and benefits. So we've remained responsive, and the city commission's a big part of that. You know, you all approving the budget and even having that carve out of funding. You know, we did that with sanitation drivers. When we detect a weakness, we're pretty quick and responsive because exactly right. Mm-hmm. We don't want to become a training ground and then and that's what happened historically. You know, because we're surrounded by bigger cities. You got Winter Haven, you got Auburndale, and you got Haines City.
And Polk County.
And then Polk County, and then now even Lakeland and others. And so we were just getting poached left and right. But we've reversed the flow, and now we're pulling them into Lake Alfred, as the HR director suggested. So, yeah.
Thank you. And I've been told that I've been speaking too much, so let's go ahead and call it a night. Thank you, everyone.
Me. Before I gavel out, I'd like to ask our city clerk, Lita, you have really impacted this city and our state. And would you announce that at least her
position,
new role?
Yes, we're honored that Lita has accepted the role as the president of the Polk County City Clerks Association. So she'll be doing that for this next coming year. We're really proud of her. Thank you, Lita.
You've made an impact on this whole state. The people that were on my committee in Tallahassee think the absolute world of you and Lynn. And just thank you again for all you do for us.
Okay.
With that said, I'll get us out of here. Safe trip home. All right.